I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin.
And we're gay.
And his and B.
Episode number 99. Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of A Gay and His NB, the podcast where we talk all the things that we're watching on television this week. And we have a fantastic episode, as always, that we are about to present to all of you. But before we do any of that, as we always do, we have a few housekeeping notes to get out of the way first.
Wherever it is that you're listening to us, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or one of the other lovely podcast platforms out there, if you could leave us a rating and a review, that helps us get into the algorithm and find other listeners like yourselves. It also lets us hear back from our listeners so that we know what you like, what you don't like, and what you want to see from us in the future.
You can also follow us across social media platforms, all at A Gay and His NB. That's on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, where we're posting new content every day, including clips from the podcast and some of the instant thoughts about the things that we are watching. We love getting into it with a dialogue with all of you. And if you want to give your thoughts on things, respond to our thoughts on things, just everything in between, you can follow us across social media, all at A Gay and His NB.
And if you'd like to support us out in the real world, we do have merch. You can head over to agayandhisnb.threadless.com and pick up some of our merch there. We have t-shirts, we have hoodies, we have magnets and stickers and mugs and all the sorts of things over there. And it's only a month and a half till Pride Month, guys. Like, time is coming up quick, and we have three Pride-specific designs on there for you to pick up. So if you want to make sure that you are marching into June with pride across your chest, go grab a pride shirt over at againisitme.threadless.com.
And last but not least, if you have a question for us that you would like us to answer on a future episode of the podcast, you can be sure to submit that to us across the social media platforms that I mentioned, or at againisnb@gmail.com. Just be sure to, in your post, to leave your name, leave your question, and who knows, we may answer it on a future episode. Babe, what are we talking about on this 99th episode of A Gay and His NB?
Well, we're going to be talking part two of the Real Housewives of Potomac reunion.
We sure are.
These green-eyed bandits over there stealing my patience every goddamn week.
Mm-hmm. Trying us real bad.
Just play it in our faces, and I'm tired of it. And honestly, I get why Candace quit.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I totally get it. We're also going to be talking this, I think it's the third episode of Martha's Vineyard.
Yes,
Summer
yes,
House
yes.
Martha's Vineyard. We're going to be talking about that this week as well. But before we get to any of that, let's talk Drag Race.
Drag Race for this week. It is our final four. Before we get to, well, not a finale episode. So there, I will say, I thought this episode was very good, and I didn't think it was going to be. Honestly, the way we left last week's episode, we were kind of like, okay, same old formula. They do the final four challenge. No one goes home. It's going to be sort of like paint by numbers. I thought this episode was really well structurally done, and I thought they should do it more often.
Honestly, yeah. I really loved one of my favorite things was the fact that Rue was active. And yeah. Constructive.
Yeah, we'll get to particularly the photo shoot part of this challenge.
Yeah.
We'll dive into it. So before we do that, they come into the workroom after Morphine's elimination. They were getting real shady on the couches, which I liked. It felt like they waited. I will say Q does say she is a shade queen, you know, in the last, like, what? Like
3 seconds. Yeah.
And so she's trying to live up to it in some way. She was getting into it with Plain a little bit in a way that I kind of enjoyed. It was a little saucy.
Well, and she likes to claim that that's, like, constant. For her.
Right.
It's like revisionist history much? You have been like, you've been given some shady looks. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. You have thrown some looks on the runway at people during judging that has been a little shady. But that's not like, that does not make you a shady queen.
Right.
That is not what you're known for. You're known for turning looks. Like, you're a designer. Fabulous. Love that.
Well, speaking of looks, I did love that our feelings of Q's makeover look from the last episode. I did appreciate Plain saying that he looked like a Muppet. Like, I was like, okay, I feel like somewhat seen at the very least. As yeah. much as, like, I mean, yes, he looked like cool club kid, but like, we litigated that last week. It's fine. And they're basically doing the whole classic like track record thing of sort of like hitting, you know, where everyone stands. Obviously, Safira and Plain both have 4 wins at this point, which again, I would like, I think I said asked it last week. I didn't. I could have looked it up, but I am very lazy. I don't think we've had like a case where you have two queens with four wins like going into like the finale. Like I think that's.
I can't remember a time. I know we've had like a four and a three.
Right.
You know, four and three and maybe a two, but like I don't think we've ever had two fours. Now, we admittedly do not watch all the international seasons, so there may be an instance in, you know, on Belgique or France or Down Under even. We only watch the first season of that.
Or Czechoslovakia or whatever the next.
Right. I think we haven't watched España. Like, there's a lot of different. There's, like, a fuck ton of franchises now.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say, like. 17.
I was about to say you were, if you were going to say 7, I was like, nah.
17, I think, is accurate because there's like, there's.
Oh, we can't go through it all. We cannot.
There's a lot. I mean, Mexico has one now. There's one in Brazil.
Yeah,
like there's a lot and fabulous. I love the celebration of drag around the world. That is so fucking important. I do wish that I knew these languages because I don't feel like the subtitles cut it.
I know we're dumb Americans and we,
well, the problem is that
I don't watch TV to read.
it's not that, right? It's that there's a level of shade and cuntiness,
yeah,
that is just not going to come across unless you know the language and the culture.
That's true.
And I feel like you just don't, and that's part of the fun of Drag Race. You feel like you're kikiing with the girls, and you don't get that if you don't know the language. And you know, it really highlights to us as Americans how some of the international queens might feel when they come onto an international All Stars or a Versus the World or something like that.
Yeah.
And English is their second language, so I get that now. I now have a more intimate
understanding
of that position.
But don't you know we're Americans, we're not supposed to feel uncomfortable. It's everyone else.
Speaking of uncomfortable, we'll talk about it when we get to Potomac, but there was a commercial placement
was hilarious.
We were dying laughing.
But anyway, we were talking about how, like, so they're talking about like the number of track record or the number of track records, number of wins in uh-huh. the track record, and they're like, okay, so well, Nymphia has two, and then Q's like, well, it's kind of more like 1.25, and it's because of the girl group. It's like, whatever. Like, this is where I'm like, okay, Q, like, it's, I don't know why, but like the shade from Q, I just find obnoxious to me. And I'm not here's the thing. I am not a wuss by any means in terms of like that kind of stuff, but I'm just like,
but shade should be fun. Hers is just petty.
Sure. There's a delivery on it that makes it like off, you know. And then Nymphia tells them, look, I'm just praying the next challenge has nothing to do with comedy writing or writing of any sort. And it's like,
dun, dun, dun.
Man, well, and just to add the writing of any, because, well, spoiler, I guess they didn't really want it to be a comedy challenge, so, but still.
Well, yeah, that's fair. But we also don't know when she made that.
Well, no, it was with all of them.
Oh, okay. I thought it was in a confessional for some reason. No.
Yeah, so it was like perfectly timed in that regard. They return to the workroom the next day, and Rue comes in. Rue does say that they are in the semifinals, which.
The only person who clocked it was Safira.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You could see her pull a face.
It was very Sheena from Vanderbilt. Oh! But, like, no, they're definitely emphasizing. She said it, like, five more times in the episode. So it's like, we're making this a thing, I guess. So Rue then introduces the mini challenge for this week. I love this one, which was they had to lip sync for your life underwater.
And this had a feeling of classic Drag Race, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like this was something from the season 4 to season 7 era, where it was like, to me, at its prime.
Where it's like, make them look stupid as possible.
Yes. But also it's like, it's funny and it's not like, it's funny and it's not like something that you're, it's just grinding on the pit crew, right? Like, yeah, we love that because yay, pit crew. But you know, at the same time, it's like, okay, well, there's only so many ways that you can make that funny.
Right. And they only ever do, like, they do, like, now the photo, like, the look crazy in drag and do, like, a weird photo shoot that we're going to, like, green screen something on. And then it's, but, like, here, it's like, they created this whole, like, contraption where it was, like, a fish tank or something that they put a camera under with, like, so, because it wasn't like you had to go full, you just had to, like, dunk your head in it, basically. I'm still the wimp that has to plug my nose before, like,
okay, well, some of them had like the nose plug things,
but I never liked those.
I don't like them. They hurt.
Yeah.
Well, I also have a wide nose.
I could make a joke there right now. No, I'm not going to do it.
Rude.
No, it wasn't. It's not a rude joke. It's more of a, well,
anyway.
So
hi, Bob.
Oh, she's not listening.
That's fair.
Safira got a new breastplate for this.
Well, okay, so she claims, I think it was at Roscoe's, she claims that that is not a new breastplate. That is the same breastplate. But the problem was, is that at the beginning of the show, she didn't realize that it was going to get super sweaty under all of the lights, and so it shrinks or something.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Wow.
But it doesn't, because you see her wearing it throughout the show, and this is the first time that it is the proper size, and it's a different skin tone.
Oh, is it?
Okay. The older one is like two shades darker than this one.
Drag is just lying at this point.
I mean, honestly, we're born naked. The rest is fucking drag.
Yeah.
So like it's a new breastplate.
Yeah.
It's a new breastplate.
It was a good choice. I like that she leaned with the breast into the water.
Plopped them in the,
gave a little twist on it. Safira ends up winning the challenge, and she wins a trip or two to Puerto Vallarta, which they're just dishing out. That MTV money, I mean, like, finally we get hour 30 episodes again, but like,
sure, but you know that they've got like a deal with the airline where they're barely paying anything for those tickets.
Yeah.
Like they're not.
So Rue then introduces the maxi challenge for this week, and it is essentially an autobiography challenge where they have to title it. They had to write like, I guess, a few short stories, like, for the autobiography. They had to do a photo shoot, and then they had to do a interview to promote the book with Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas, which I'm fine with Matt, like, getting into. Matt is great on these shows.
He was so good in these interviews too. Like, I really felt like he was doing a good job of walking that line of being a real interviewer, right?
Yeah.
But also like throwing in questions in there that was meant to maybe throw them off, because it's still a challenge, right?
Right.
So he was doing a good job of, this still feels like a real interview, but there's definitely some points in there where it's like, that was a producer question.
Well, and it was so good. If you remember, they did this challenge in season two, technically, right?
Right.
With the autobiography that they had to promote on like a live shot thing with an interviewer while also selling the acai drink at the same time.
Oh God, that's right.
And it's really bad. And it's like, but it's it, like,
hey, you can't shit on a challenge that gave us, I love this drink.
I mean, there's like that. There's Jujubee's Memoirs of a Geisha. I forgot what it is. It's like something, something, I'm still here.
Yes. It was ridiculous.
But like, this was like the inner, I don't even know who the fucking, it was like some guy from like,
it was the guy from Absolute.
Or that's what it was. Yeah, yeah.
Because it was his vodka.
But it was like to throw they were designing it to throw them off as much as possible, right?
Yes.
And here it's like, this felt more like something they would actually experience. And Matt does a good job of making it, like you said, dropping questions to give them a challenge, but still making it conversational in a way that it develops. It was really great. I also maintain that if Bethany Frankel gets her way and we get the downfall of Andy Cohen, Matt Rogers needs to take over for, at the very least, the reunions.
Well, yes, because he is someone, I think he's more culturally aware, maybe, than Andy is. I mean, still love Andy, but he's just not, he's been doing it for long enough time, and he's not like growing as much as public opinion does as far as like civil rights, social justice, those sorts of things.
There's that.
And so he's just not in the place anymore, I think, to do that. I still think he needs to do Watch What Happens Live. Fine. Do that.
Right, because that's a different vibe.
If I was Watch What Happens Live,
I think with the reunions, my issue with Andy lately is he definitely doesn't get to the root causes of things.
Right.
And sort of like goes beyond the surface level of like something that has happened on the season and really dive deeper. I think Matt does an amazingly better job at doing that. He's way more observant of things.
Yes.
He's way more, you know, can...
And like, he's a Bravo super fan.
Right.
He knows these women, even if they don't know him.
Right.
You know, and he's going to be able to give... I would be happy with him hosting a panel talking about the colorism issues on Potomac in a way that I would not be comfortable with Andy doing.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I feel like he knows more about the topic and can speak about it intelligently, even if he's just hosting and asking the questions.
And also, but that's the thing. Like, with this challenge, this is just a Matt Rogers praise episode.
Honestly.
But, like, he never, like, this was his first time meeting any of these four drag queens, right?
Right.
And he really quickly understood them and sort of was able to, I'm sure there was help from producers in a way, but, like, was able to sort of get to a place with them that felt like he had been watching them all season.
Right. Well, and he also got to read their snippets. I wish they would publish those.
I'd love to read that.
Even
if it was just like something you post on like the Drag Race Instagram or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? I was like, they told us the generalness of some of these stories, like what they were about, and then they had the queen actually sort of elaborate. But like, I wanted to actually read it.
But because the judges used that in their judging runway.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if this is a part of the challenge enough that it is being judged by the judges and not just something to give them questions from for Matt, then I need to read that. As a viewer, I need to be able to read that because it's being judged.
Right. And I know it's hard on like a reality show because it's like, oh, that might be a little too long in terms of filling time. If not posting it online when it airs, I also thought it would have been a good idea to, in Untucked, do like a Pink Furry Box moment where they have the queens read each other's, like, you know, the chapter or the story or whatever that they do. I thought that would have been a nice way to sort of, because of course they need a full time on Untucked because they're not. We never talked about Untucked because it's like.
Well, and especially the further you get into the season and the less queens there are, it's hard to like make a dramatic Untucked.
Yeah. And also, because the challenge is also inspired by Rue's new autobiography that she has out, The House of Hidden Meaning. Have you seen the book tour?
No.
It is hilarious to me. It is the fun, like, it is Rue at the height of her woo-woo bullshit. Her on the fucking Call Her Daddy podcast in like out of drag, but in like a black beanie.
I did see that she had done Call Her Daddy and I was like, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
It's fascinating. It's a really fascinating time. Rue is very, as much as I roll my eyes at some of the stuff Rue says, makes some interesting statements that I don't always agree with, but I'm like, okay. Like, she's a fascinating enough person to where I can just hear her talk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's always been interesting to me how she, I think it may have been from the Call Me Daddy or Call Her Daddy or whatever it is called. I can't remember.
Well, I was like, I watched the Ariana Maddox interview and I saw the RuPaul one and that's it.
That's it.
Not my genre.
But it's interesting how she talks about how she's not like the persona that she gives on the show. That's not Rue.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very quiet, reserved person.
Yeah, a lot of people say that, actually.
And it's interesting to me how much even the personality is part of her drag. You know? Like, even just like... Because I've always thought, very similar to wrestlers, the most successful drag is just a, you know, a amped up version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just like for most wrestlers, the best, you know, gimmick you can have is the something that's an amped up version of who you are because you have so much to draw from at that point.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting to me to see how different RuPaul, the drag queen, is from RuPaul Charles. Those are different humans, completely different people. And that's just interesting to me because we've seen so many queens on the show that's just who they are.
Yeah.
That's just who they are the whole fucking time. And it's weird that the host who is telling them, especially on the makeover challenges where you just got to bring out your real self and, you know, all of that stuff. That's not you.
No,
that's not you at all. What are you talking about? Bringing out your true self. Your true self is at home in a beanie. The closest we've ever gotten to real Rue on the show is when she did the face bikini for the reunion on season 11.
Sure.
You know, like, was that season 11?
Oh, no. That was
COVID?
That was the COVID. Season 12.
Okay. So, yeah. So, like, come on.
Yeah.
That's the closest to RuPaul Charles we've ever seen.
Plain and Q are debating whether to go more funny and more serious or in terms of the topic. I guess the choice was to go serious. I know the default typically is to go funny on these shows, but like, well, I will say maybe Rue could have made that clearer, like when they were writing. Yeah. But I think that I appreciated that this was a better way in which to get personal stories out, right? And to like do that narrative. And we didn't get at the end of the episode, maybe we'll do it for the finale, but we didn't get for the episode like the look at your younger self thing, or where it just feels a little like,
well, but the whole episode was introspective, right? So I was fine with that.
But that's the thing, I love it done in this challenge. Yes. Like, because it's like there's a reason why they're doing it, and it's like, you know what I mean? It's
I will say that I did miss the music video. Because I look forward to a new music video every year.
Sure.
And like, because they're always so cunty. Yeah. Like, really? We didn't get like because it was so good last year.
I mean, they did like.
And the year before.
They're just so good. Two like girl group challenge. Like, it was just like we've had like.
I mean, I get it because they didn't have writers. So like they had to rely on these type of challenges, and they were like, we've done 8 girl groups this season.
By the way, it seems like our theory is correct. It's not our theory, but like what I had seen about like a rumor that like they have already filmed the finale and stuff. It seemed like they filmed it on like the Secret Celebrity Drag Race set or something, because it's a different set. And like,
oh, really? I haven't seen any pictures.
I am assuming it is the same set that they're doing next week's episode with the returning queens.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that either. So next week they're doing the returning queens, and they all lip sync in a Lollapalooza. Perusa, sure. Is that what they're called?
For 50 grand.
Great. And then I guess there will be some sort of tiny reunion during that.
Probably.
Because this is usually where the reunion episode would be slotted in.
Yeah.
And then we'll have the finale the week after that.
Yeah. So they're going to, it's going to be different than usual. So they go into the photo shoot with Rue and Albert Sanchez, who's the photographer. Nymphia is up first and her book is Breaking Wind, The Art of Letting Go.
I'm glad she took that damn jacket thing off.
Oh, you didn't? Well, at a certain point, I think, yes.
I think it was overwhelming her because she's so tiny. It was too much.
Maybe. Yeah. I liked it. I liked the final shot with it off. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And what you were alluding to before, it was very nice to see Rue like specifically get in there and like help with poses and like, this is your light, and sort of like finding like the perfect.
Which is so weird because it's different than how she usually directs like a acting challenge.
Yeah.
Because those are so useless. She's so blah in those. She's just like, well, do it again. And it's like, what do you mean? What do I do different? Right. What do you want from me, bitch? Like,
or they don't take it seriously, right? It's
right.
Just like, oh, do some, like, you like go off this funny prompt I'm telling you. She took it very seriously, like an actual photo shoot.
Like, she literally walked in there and said, okay, put your arm here, like, do this, like, touched the queens and like move their hand and like do this and this thing right here, showed them a pose, like do that. Like, I loved this interaction from Rue because it helps remind us that this bitch has been doing this shit professionally for decades.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like, okay, Okay, you know what you're doing. Okay.
Q's is alphabet soup, savor every bite.
Which, absolutely not. The cover looked dumb.
Well, when she came in that dress, I was like, you pick that dress? Out of all the items you could have picked?
She's had some fierce looks this season.
It's like beige doily baby doll. It was like, what?
I hate a baby doll dress. It does not look good on anyone.
And it'd be one thing if she did like a spin and it moved, right?
Right.
Like, I think what I liked about everyone else's looks is that they factored in movement and they factored in like how it was going to like be an impactful sort of thing. Like, Q's wasn't that. And even like when Rue was like, okay, so for your cover, are you thinking like sort of like profile or are you thinking like full body? And she's like, maybe full body or maybe like profile.
Like, she had not thought this through at all.
No, it was pointless. It's like, what is this, again, beige baby doll doily dress doing in like a bowl of alphabet soup?
I feel
and
like
you're just like, hey,
I feel like, did they give them a like, hey, have some ideas in mind? I don't know. Like, I just...
Well, I think going with this also alphabet soup thing limits you in a certain way.
Oh, yeah.
That it becomes a problem. Like, again, we said it. Why was the makeover not Q&A? But also, why isn't your book, like, referencing the idea of, like, this is a Q&A of, you know... Like, you know what I mean? Like, something.
Or, like, alliterative, where it's all Q's. Come up with the title that's all Q's.
Yeah. Some kind of take on it.
Speaking of things needing some movement, let's talk about Plain Jane and her hair.
Oh my God. Here's the thing. I love when they were doing the photo shoot, we was like, yeah, flip that hair this way. Yeah, flip that hair.
I thought she was like living for it. And I'm like, that's a little, you don't think that wig's a little limp?
It's like, okay, but it's human, whatever.
Okay.
But then they get to the fucking judging later and they're like, we were trying to do everything with that hair. We were trying to, like...
It was, like, you know how Jinx teased her hair and just pissed it off?
Yeah.
She didn't even try. She's besties with this wig. There's no teasing.
Well, and she had the, like, fake running mascara.
At that point, like, drench yourself, right? Come out looking like...
But also, she was supposed to come out of a plane crash was the whole thing.
Right. Like, that doesn't make sense either. Like, don't call it plane crash. Like, come up out of water or something and have a completely wet look.
Yeah.
Give me that. Like, the mermaid look that they did, like, in season 8 or 9. 9?
Oh, my God. When was the fucking mermaid? Oh, 10.
10. You know what I mean, though? Like, give me something like that. And that would explain the flat hair, you know? I'm fine with that, then.
Yeah. And then Safira's book is Slewfoot, Embracing All of Me Now.
Bitch.
And the ponytail was such a smart move. I love the way that also Safira was like, I wanted this, like to circle around me to sort of... Like, Safira also had a... Like, Rue was like, oh, I don't need to help her with this almost at all. Like,
at all.
It's like, she knows what she's doing. It's perfect.
It was giving me Bianca Belair from WWE.
Yes.
If you don't know her, she is fierce. She is amazing.
Some of the stuff from the interview with Matt Rogers, they critique Plain later of sort of still just being in the shtick. Like, she does a joke about, like, oh, all my busted ass, you know, season 16 sisters, and then, like, makes, like, a mandatory meeting joke and stuff like that. And it was a little, like, awkward in that regard, in the sense of, like, I get it. I think, like, in a different environment, that is, like, yeah, that's funny, and, like, that's the dynamic, but it's, like...
But, like, he's not asking shady questions, so why are you giving shady answers?
Sure.
Like, you should not be coming in there with answers ready. You should be coming in there knowing who you are and answering genuinely.
Yeah. She, like, starts a little bit in that path and then, like, diverts towards the end because I think, again, it's like, I think she had in her head of, like, I need to be entertaining, I need to be funny, and, like, this is the stuff they like, so therefore... But that's not what the challenge was.
No, and it's funny because every other challenge the entire season, and I would say this is true of every season, the goal is make Rue laugh. As much as possible, make Rue laugh. That is not the challenge this week. Mm-hmm. The challenge this week is introspection and vulnerability.
Right.
And that's always what it is for the top four. So she kind of should have known that, yeah. I feel.
Yeah, that's probably true. So let's hit the runway. Rue walks down the runway, and the guest judge for this week is Ronan Farrow. oh my God, the fucking joke that Ronan makes in the where they give them all like the one joke when he goes, "I haven't been this nervous since I took a paternity test," and I was like,
"Wow,
good on him for making that joke," because he gets that. I'm sure that is like shit he gets on all the time of being like, "Yeah, I mean, his dad is supposed to be Woody Allen, but he looks like Frank Sinatra," and you know,
yeah.
So come on,
and look, I wouldn't blame his mom. Woody Allen is terrible.
Yeah, and okay, so then let's go on to the runway. The category is Fandango. So they have to, and again, I'm assuming they're going to do Eleganza, whatever, for the actual like finale. So it was just weird seeing them do like a challenge that was like not that. Nymphia wins. I really liked. I will say Michelle being like, "If I never have to see another Marie Antoinette look on Drag Race ever again, I will be perfectly happy with that." I was like, "Oh, okay."
But like looking through the history of, and also
it's a default, but
yes, but then all of them are always going to get compared back to Raja's, and you're just not going to win.
No, yeah, that's true.
Like nobody even in what 14 seasons since that happened. Nobody's topping that look.
Yeah.
That look was so fierce.
And I understand the instinct to do, like, that would be my instinct when it comes to fan. Like, that makes, like, a pretty logical, like, conclusion. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the incorporation of the fans in this look, because it's, like, in the skirt, but, like, I don't know if the placement of it.
Fingernails.
And,
fingernails were fucking amazing.
Yeah, I do agree. Those were really cute. And it's a great look. It's just them, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Where are the fans?
Yeah. Plain Jane's. I thought this was the best Plain Jane has looked all season.
Yes.
I really like this look.
Absolutely. I do wish that the color of the dress and everything was slightly more amped up. It's a little muted for me. It's more champagne, and I wish it had gone more into a golden arena.
Sure.
Just to have a little bit more pop against her skin tone.
Well, yes, but I do like that the bodice is a little more gold. That sort of like armory, like sort of like
yeah
bodice. I like that it wasn't also, I like that it was a different silhouette for her because it wasn't like all hips.
Yes.
Like it was a little straighter even for like a typical look like this where you would want like at least some hip. But I like that she kind of did it without.
Yeah.
There was like a contrast to that. And I thought the hair was actually really fantastic. Yeah.
As flat as it was in the photo shoot, it's like got so much volume here.
Yeah. Q's is next. Well, not for me.
What's frustrating is that she does this VO, right?
Yeah.
Talking about how the fan on her shoulders is perfectly framing her hair. Bitch, it's flat out behind you.
You hated her hair. You were revolted
this,
by her hair.
This hair is atrocious.
I don't hate it. I don't think it does well to
okay.
her face.
So she does these. She's got 8 different textures going on is my issue.
Yeah.
She's got like these curly cues that are like sculptural and like sticking up. But then she's got like the tiered, it looks like a lace dress that has like the different tiers, but it's in cut into the hair.
Well, it looks like one of the, like if you see on like a really fancy curtain.
Yeah.
You
know, those tassels.
Yeah.
It's awful. It, and it's like different, almost a different color. Right. Because the tassel bits are like platinum blonde, and then the blonde on top of her hair is slightly warmer. It's like a more, not honey, but like more into the warm side of blonde. And it's like, these are not the same color. What are we doing?
And I did see, I forgot who said it, was like, it was strange to see her do this dress, which is verging on somewhere between like ballerina into like almost ice skater, but yeah, with these like hooker heels.
Well, and, also,
and she doesn't really, and she kind of just walks the runway with it. She doesn't really like do a presentation that like elevates the look in a way.
Yeah. I will also point out the reason that she doesn't walk well in heels. She's doing heel first.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I just noticed that in this picture.
You don't walk heel first in stilettos.
No.
It's toe first, bitch. Toe first.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Oh, man.
How do you stay upright? How have you not snapped a stiletto at this point?
Mm. Yeah, it wasn't my favorite. But speaking of my favorite was Safira's. I feel like that's a recurring theme this season, but like really cool look. I love the sort of like dramatic moment of the fans coming out from the sides.
Yes. I love the pairing of like this dark, almost navy, but not really quite navy blue with the neon green.
Mm-hmm.
Greenish, yellowish. Like, ugh, just stunning.
The hair is so
cool. The hair. Fuck me, that hair.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
It's really, really great. Safira is just like phenomenal in terms of the runway every time.
I can't.
Yeah. Oh, the only thing I will say about Safira, while I do love her looks every time, I was so puzzled when like, cause so they're kind of judging them. They're not judging them on the season overall, but they're like talking about also like, you did all these great, like, remember this amazing moment of you, et cetera. And they said that Safira, the best look that Safira wore on the runway was the DragCon 1980 look, which was the like black.
Not just the best look on that she
of
wore,
the whole season.
But the best look of the whole season. And I'm like,
huh?
What?
It's good, but
it's phenomenal, but it's not. Like, she has outdone that one several times.
Like, five times over. Like there's five other looks I would have been like, it's better than that.
Well, and Q has had some looks that have outdone that. Nymphia's had some looks that have outdone that.
Yeah, I was like, puzzled by that.
I don't get that.
Sure. So the winner of the challenge is Nymphia Wind, because they really appreciated Nymphia. Like, and I actually thought, I don't think they were too... Like, I sometimes hate it where it's like, you have to cry right now, basically. That's what the vibe that comes off sometimes on Drag Race, where it's like, unless you show me your trauma, you aren't, you know, winning. But here, I did agree with a certain point where it's like, here's the thing. Don't fucking come for me in comments. I love Nymphia. But I also was getting to a place with Nymphia where I was getting a little tired.
Yeah.
Only because it's like... funny joke, bananas, some fart humor. Like,
yeah.
It was just a little... I didn't have a full understanding of her as a person this season. And this challenge gave us that. I love what she said in the interview about sort of like white beauty standards and like how that affected her when she was young and stuff like that, and how she's been having to sort of like unlearn those things in her brain. Like, I really thought she did a great job of like... embracing the challenge, going full scale with it, not and still being her, but not like, you know, a little freer, right?
Yeah.
You know, I would have maybe given it to Safira, even though that's a fifth win and that's like crazy.
Has anyone had five wins?
Not that I can think of. But like I fell in love with Safira during the Matt Rogers interview. Not knowing that also the slew foot thing was also like a very serious, like sort of like not trauma for her, but like sort of a thing she had to overcome. Like she really, like, again, if you're looking for someone, if you're looking for the winner of Drag Race to be an ambassador for the community, and like she can do that.
It
is utterly clear that she can do that.
Well, and it's a logical follow up to Sasha Colby, right?
Yeah.
Like it's someone who can bring that same reverence to the work of like the art of drag, but also like is able to kiki and be real with people in a certain way that I don't know if this is not a read on Plane. I have been like shitting on Plane all season, but I don't know if she is in a place with her drag persona to be able to be real with people.
Right. You know what I mean? Like
she's not able to let that guard down.
As much as like I couldn't see Plain Jane going on like the Today Show.
Right.
In the way that I could see Sasha Colby, Simone,
right.
like, you know, Jada, and any of the list of like recent queens, you know what I mean, that have won. Like, I see her more in sort of like her niche.
Yeah.
And like, as far, and not like representative of the flag of drag and drag race and
right.
sort of like the advocate in that regard. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm leaning towards Safira to win this season.
I don't know how you would pick anyone else from episode one. Like yeah. episode one, I don't, whatever was her episode that she came in. She was the clear winner to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as when Sasha Colby showed up last season. We knew.
Yeah.
We knew she was winning the season because look at her.
It was plainly clear.
It's evident.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I do love all four of these queens. I think that all the judging this week, I 100% agree with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For the first time this season, I think. Probably.
But we're picky bitches. Plain and Q end up in the bottom two. I loved Plain and Untucked being like, really? This bottom
two? To the camera.
Yeah, it was playing it up in a way, but like it wasn't too serious. But
yeah.
It was like, it was funny. It was really good. And so they are having to lip sync to Better Be Good For Me by Tina Turner. This looks like it was okay. Plain's instinct is really just bounce those titties.
Like, I mean, like at the end of the day, make Rue laugh.
Right. Because in the one
unless
lip
it's Diana Ross.
Yeah.
No laughing during Diana Ross.
But like the one lip sync in the beginning of the season, it really is just bounce. Like that's her gag. And she did a pretty good job overall in the lip sync, but it was like, yeah, it was like that was the fact that that was the big gag. I was like, okay. And also, it was weird. She like took off the dress and just revealed this nude like body, like she was in like, you remember like Chandelier, the Sia video. It was that. And I was like, oh, okay. It was a little weird. I did love also like because Q's dancing we've talked about and it's a little
quirky.
The ending pose that Q does, it looks like she was like preparing to be like, it was supposed to be this big impactful bam I'm a star thing, but it looked like she was like waiting to be raptured or something. It was like, take me God. It was
she was a little early for the eclipse that was this past weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Rue declares Shantae you stay to Plain Jane. And so, but of course, we were all like I said last week, I'm like, oh, they do it all the time where the final four and then no one goes home. And then Rue goes, Q.
Long pause.
Like,
long pause.
10 seconds of just pause. Safira's waiting. Everyone's waiting. What's Rue's going to say? Thank you for sharing your beauty. I was like, Oh, that was cold.
Oh, that was great.
Like, have you seen the Simpsons meme where it's Bart with the TV remote going, okay, hey, pause right there. And that was the moment that, like right, you could pause right on Q's face.
Oh,
where
yeah.
It just like, and of course, doing that to Q, who is so like invested in everything that she does. And like, oh, she was trying so hard to just be like, I'm so happy for my experience. And
I was expecting a full breakdown on the runway.
1,000%.
Didn't someone else do that this season?
Mirage kind of did.
Oh, yeah.
But like, that was expectation and downfall. This, it was like, you did so well. You just didn't make it to the end.
I honestly kind of expected less of a sobbing breakdown and more of a Sue Sylvester going after the principal's office.
It was something. I was like, I clutched my pearls. I was like, that is mean. I'm sorry. That was really mean, but it was great television. Yeah, that was Drag Race for this week. Like we mentioned, next week is the lip sync Lollapalooza with all the returning queens. That should
Yay.
Be very fun. And then the finale in 2 weeks.
I love how Dawn tweeted. She was like, girl, next week is a Lollapalooza. Just wait another week and see my finale look.
Yeah, yeah.
We know that we're not looking forward to being the Lollapalooza. It's fine.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm here for.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so that was Drag Race for this week. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And then when we come back, we're talking part two of the Real Housewives of Potomac reunion. Don't go anywhere.
Oh. Well, hello, friends. I'm your pal in the mainstream media.
And I'm the Riz.
And, you know, Riz, it takes years of strenuous, dedicated training before you're worthy to step inside a professional wrestling ring. But it takes even more time to develop complex, highly astute opinions about professional wrestling. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes. And you know where we can find that?
Yes.
On the Wrestling Man.
That's right.
Do you want something new to put on your reading list? Are you feeling your holiday spirit grow while also being astutely politically in tune?
Then you'll want to pick up The Santa Strike, a new book by Shanna Hamaker.
While home in Midland, Texas on a weekend visit with the eccentric uncle who raised him, Marion Wachowski, otherwise known as Mary, discovers a long-forgotten letter Uncle Joe wrote to Santa Claus. Mary keeps it to share with his girlfriend Lindsay and his best friend Tommy. At first, they consider the letter to be nothing more than a silly lark. What kind of grown man would write a letter to Santa? But soon, Mary and Lindsay find themselves caught in a much larger mystery, concerning many, many more letters to Santa, all surrounding the crisis of gun violence in America.
You can order The Santa Strike now on Amazon, available both on Kindle and in paperback.
Sidekick Media Services. We are your sidekick in business for social media, video production, and more. Find out more at SidekickMediaServices.com.
Welcome back to Again as MB. Let's catch up with the ladies of the DMV. What happened to the lights? Did the power go out? Well, thank God we have all this gaslighting on Real Housewives of Potomac.
Yeah, it's about right. Part two of the Potomac reunion. I am so ready for the season to be done.
Yesterday.
Honestly, when it's like I was preferring Mia and at points NECA over like
honestly.
These Green Eyed Bandit OGs who are just like, oh, they're just, they found my last nerve and they're just digging into it.
Tap dancing.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, and we'll get to it also where it's like, they are, well, Robin clearly isn't because allegedly she's gone. But like,
is that still not confirmed?
It hasn't been confirmed. I have a feeling and not until part three ends is it going to be like confirmed. Mm. I also heard a rumor Wendy's not coming back, but we'll see.
I wouldn't blame her either. At that point, though, this show would be unwatchable.
Yes. I mean, they would have to definitely do major restructuring, but like still. Yeah. So we come back into the episode and pick up from the bomb that Wendy dropped about what Gordon said about Jeremiah trying, or not Jeremiah, Ink trying to take Jeremiah because Ink thought that Jeremiah was his son. And Andy's like, why does Ink think Jeremiah's his son? Mia goes, because we had an affair shortly after. Now, here's the thing. I did IUI. I'm a woman. I know my body. That child is Gordon's child. And I had a lot of questions. And for not, maybe nothing Mia can answer, but from like, so does Ink think that like, because that was a little confused. I'm like, I thought she said she got her baby through IUI when she was like advising NECA on it, right?
Right.
But is he thinking that like the IUI didn't take and that they had intercourse and the natural method like was what bore out in it or whatever?
Maybe.
I don't know how that works. If there's any like, again, can we get Jackie and Simone on the line? Like,
I'll be fine with just Simone.
Or it's, well, sure. Can this happen?
Uh-huh.
Right? That's all I need. I don't need any in-depth sort of like details beyond that. Just, can this happen? Yeah. So, and then us, this is happening. Like, Mia's still explaining sort of like more of the situation. Fucking Ashley's like, but it looks, I mean, Jeremiah looks like Gordon. And Candace's like, but they kind of, but like Gordon and Ink also kind of look similar. And like, they're like chatting up and being like, okay, but when you look at the face, it's like a very strong, like, there's just sort of like,
just get the test, y'all. Like, it's not hard.
But like, it was a little like, okay, we're gossiping. It's like Mia's like actually
in her face, though.
Yeah. And then Karen goes, look, children are off limits. This baby is going to have to watch this. So I think we can respectfully just move on. And here,
no.
Look, I do. Here's like, it is icky. It's like, oh God, Jeremiah is going to have to watch this.
But the thing is this is not about Jeremiah.
Sure.
Jeremiah is like a central figure in this, but it's not about him. It's about all these other people.
Yeah.
It's about like, and at the end of the day, Jeremiah deserves to know who his biological father is.
That is true.
So like, that's not.
But because Jeremiah was only like 7 or 8, maybe a little bit younger.
Yeah.
I think like that, I think there still needs to be time. Like, you know, if Gordon is still going to be his father in terms of like, presenting as his father, I do agree that he has the right to know, but I think there needs to be time in terms of that.
Because here's the thing. They get divorced, right?
Yeah.
They go on their merry little way. The time to find out is not when Gordon decides to be shady in his will.
Correct. That is correct.
Like, that's not, it's not right to hold that over Jeremiah's head.
Which I would hope to God Gordon wouldn't, but also based off of the conversation, does Gordon have anything left to put in a will? That's what it's sounding like.
Maybe, but we don't know what will happen between now and then, how much time we don't know how much time any of us have left, right?
Right.
So, and we don't know what he could do in that time. You know, he could start another business. He could make millions. He could win the lottery. You know, we don't know.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
Andy asked Karen if Ink was the one who she was referring to when she was bringing up, you know, you were with a rapper. And Karen goes, yes. And Mia goes, and he's not a rapper. And Karen goes, he's a rapper DJ.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, maybe he DJs exclusively rap, and that's what she meant by that. And then Andy goes, he's a radio personality, 20 markets. And Mia's like, oh, you're learning. Thank you, Andy. Because Mia said him straight last episode. Mia goes, Karen, when did you hear I was with the rapper? Just to get this straight. And Karen goes, the Grand Dame family reunion party. I was told that y'all connected after that. And Mia goes, we weren't talking then. So it's, I guess the timeline's off. But also, I was so confused. I was like, you found out, Karen, at your family reunion party? But I was like, oh, the party for your spinoff show called Family Reunion.
Right.
That, I was like, why was Mia there? Why maybe Ink was there? I was so confused.
Yeah.
Andy then asked, you know, hey, you know, Robin has got shit for not sharing what she went through. You know, everyone's talking about how transparent they are. And I love Mia cuts him off and goes, but Andy, I also sat in that salt cave and told Robin directly that I was filing for divorce. So I'm very transparent. Yeah, but to me, like,
that's not what she said, though. She said in that salt cave, when we were going through this, I retained a divorce attorney. That does not equal I am currently filing for divorce.
Fine. But I think what she's getting at is I was like, at the very least, I was more upfront that there were issues and that we were at the very least having going to couples
absolutely.
Therapy. And I was on the brink of divorcing him.
And we saw all of that on the show. So even if she wasn't upfront with that with the ladies,
right.
We saw it as the audience.
Right. And Mia also says that like the Ink thing is separate. Like the Ink
right.
thing is not like why I divorced him. So, like, that's also what you have to keep in mind in terms of that. And that's my, but that's the other thing with the Robin, like, people comparing the Robin situation. People don't share everything immediately because in life, people don't share everything
right.
immediately. But your situation on a reality show still has to be in line for the most part with how things actually are. And I would argue that Mia's was.
Right. I would agree with that.
As opposed to Robin, who was just like, we're a happy couple, and we, you know, we love each other, and we have nothing to worry about. But, you know, I'm thinking about putting a infidelity clause, but, like, you know, I don't worry too. Like, doing that and then having this situation with Canada Girl is inconsistent.
Right.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. Also, your Robin impression is kind of perfect.
It's really good. She kind of, I'm not trying to be mean about this, but she kind of really is like Eeyore. She gives
a little
Eeyore
bit,
vibes.
Yeah.
Giselle then asks Mia, watching that scene, Gordon seems extremely angry. Like, is he mad because he's no longer financially where he was and you've decided to go with Ink, who is more financially stable? And Mia goes, no. So Ink has absolutely nothing to do with my separation from Gordon. It's just co-mingled because of the timing. Like,
and I agree with that. I would say that their issues exist beyond that, and I feel like Gordon in that the camera pickup scene
mm-hmm.
was so focused on the Ink shit that he was trying to equate it to Mia's legitimate concerns, and she's like, no, bitch, this has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
He is a response to this bullshit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's not the reason.
It's not the reason. And stop trying to conflate them.
Andy, at this point, they start to play like 20 questions with Mia. It felt like, because Andy goes, does it have to do with Gordon's finances? And Mia goes, no. Robin then goes, it probably has more to do with his age. And Mia goes, no.
Like, okay, but can we play 20 questions with the other side of the couch, please?
Sure.
For once?
Yeah. Mia's like, it just has a lot to do with the constant, like sort of like aggressiveness, like that she was talking about during the season. She goes, you're waking me up at 4 o'clock in the morning because you want to have business chats, or emptying my bank account. That's a form of abuse. It's controlling. I mean, eventually a girl's got to do what a girl's got to do. And so, yeah, it's like, yeah. I thought that was important for Mia, and it's hard. Yes. It's hard to tell when Mia's like telling the truth or not. So it's like, you know, I think when we get Gordon on stage, it's going to be interesting to see if their stories compare and where they, I mean, I don't think they are going to completely, but like, I think she is presenting as transparent in terms of this. And it's like, and in terms of the moments in which like she's talked about feeling isolated or feeling like abuse, like verbally or just emotionally abused, she's been honest with that all season.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's pretty accurate. I like Mia. Well, and Mia's been pretty, like, not even just this season. It's been like, pretty much her whole time on the show has been pretty transparent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's one of the things that I respect about her, is that even outside of this stuff with Gordon, right? It's like, she may have a fucked up point of view, but she's going to own it. And I don't agree with her on everything, but I enjoy her because she is authentic with the audience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she's authentic on this cast.
Yeah, and I think being authentic and being always truthful are two different things, too.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Mia confirms that she is helping Gordon financially and he's not working currently. And so, like, she kind of talked about this in the finale as well. Mm-hmm. Andy asked about saying, you know, that she might have married Gordon for his money when she was talking to Ashley versus saying that she came in with more money from an inheritance. And she explains the story again. She said she lost 3 grandparents, like, in, like, quick succession, like, the year she got with Gordon.
Yeah.
And got some money out of that. She says, in the year after we married, I realized he was really functioning bankrupt. We had this extravagant wedding and rolled out white carpet. He shouldn't have been doing all of that stuff. I wish I had, and she basically is like, I wish I had a better knowledge of how I would have needed to be more informed and more active in terms of helping him control his money, like in terms of like where he was spending it.
Yeah. Well, and it's so strange, right? Because you expect Mia to be coming into this situation as almost a sugar baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it turns out, when we finally learn the truth of it, it was almost the opposite, because you expect her to come in, sugar baby, access to all this money she's never had money to before, and start spending like crazy. No, that was him.
Yeah.
And like, she came into his life in the middle of a spiral, almost, where she's like now tied to this person who is out of control in a lot of ways. And it's just like, this is really interesting and explains a lot that we have seen over the seasons from her.
Andy asked about, there's apparently a story out about her being sued for rent at her Bethesda building that we see on the season and what that was all about. And she basically says in her words, Gordon refused to move out. I left, and the reason that it's not paid is I refuse to cover the entire bill. He has to pay his portion.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't living in that house. Yes, but it depends on whose name was on the lease, and if both of your names were on the lease, you're still, you know, I think, yeah, it depends. I think morally she's correct, but I also think, like,
yes,
legally, I don't know if that's correct.
Yeah, well, no, legally it's probably not. Like, if she put her name on the lease, well, but they're still married. It doesn't matter whose name is on the lease. What's mine is yours and what's yours is mine. If just your name is on a lease and you go out and do that and then don't pay the money, they can come after me for that.
She also mentioned that she can't start to file for divorce until June because she has some kind of like non-disclosure, but some sort of like written document where because of the selling of the businesses, like they aren't going to allow it until then.
I think it's less of they don't want to allow it and that it is less messy if they resolve all of that. And then whatever they get from that, they split that in the divorce, as opposed to trying to start divorce proceedings in the middle of selling the businesses. And then it becomes a nightmare on how to handle it.
Yeah, that's probably correct. Andy then asked Wendy and Candace if Gordon had dropped any hints to Chris or Eddie when the phone call happened. They kind of like chuckle a little bit because it's, I don't think it was malicious, but like the situation was just like, oh my God. You could tell Mia is slightly annoyed and she goes, she jumped in and goes, so when I went through this, everyone here reached out to me except for Candace and Wendy. And I, here's the thing. I credit Candace because Candace cops to it immediately. It's like, yeah. I will own that. Yes, I should have called. Like, I don't, this, and again, we'll get to it later too. This is why I don't have an issue with Candace this reunion, because she is very apologetic throughout and is owning certain things.
Even
right?
things that she should not have to own.
Yeah.
And apologizes for things that she did nothing wrong.
But here she was like, I probably could have reached out.
Right. Well, and I get it because she's been on such weird, shaky ground with everybody. She doesn't know where she stands with these ladies.
Yeah.
So how can you know if that's going to be welcomed or
I
not?
I didn't even realize her and Mia seemed to be good until Candace left and Mia was talking positively about her. So like, I, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just, it's hard to read sometimes.
Wendy then goes, I'll say this to Mia in full transparency. When Gordon reached out to our husbands, he was there to annihilate you. He called you everything but a child of God. And Mia goes, so why couldn't you call me then? And Wendy goes, let me finish. Where we left off last year, you physically assaulted me. And by the way, so I'm just reading Wendy's part because at this point, as this is happening, the fucking like peanut gallery is just like chiming in off to the other couch, being like, they were bumping vaginas. And she, like, it's, I don't care. Whatever. I honestly could have just, I wanted to hear what Wendy had to say. She goes, you know, at that point, I could have said, this is my lick back. So while I did not call you, please understand that the woman I am, I never once said anything till today about what he has said about you. Which, I mean, I kind of would have, like, I would have wanted Wendy to just go to Candace trying to be like, I should have called you. But, like, yeah, technically what Wendy says, I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, yes, you could have been much more malicious in terms of, like, spreading the stuff that Gordon said.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't, you know.
But, I mean, I understand Wendy's point of views. Like, I don't fuck with you. Like, we're not on that level right now.
Sure.
And sure, I'm going to protect you because you are a fellow Black woman and you are someone who is going through something extremely difficult. So I'm not going to put your shit out there because I'm a better person than that.
Yeah.
But I'm also not going to call and be the shoulder for you to cry on.
Sure.
Because we're not cool like that.
Yeah. Candace goes, I felt really uncomfortable for you. I was very concerned for you. I just didn't want to be involved. And Andy goes, I mean, reaching out and being concerned isn't getting involved. It's just being a friend. Yes. And Candace goes, could I have reached out to you? Yes. Like, Candace just, like, cops to it. So it's like, I don't, you know. And then Mia goes, I mean, you know, even Karen called. And Karen and I are on the outs. Like, we've been, you know, dragging each other all season. You know, she called me multiple times. I've been coming for her all year. You know, this is a sisterhood, and we want to preach that. And it was said in a way by Mia that was very much like like trying to mend and like trying to be like, this is the message that we want to put out into the world, right? That we're a sisterhood and we're going to build on that. So
I didn't
live up
get
to that.
I got that more of a reprimand.
It definitely was reprimandy, but it was said almost in like a, it was said in like a stern parenting way almost is what I mean.
Yeah.
Like there was something interesting about that in that regard.
I mean, it is kind of similar to the vibe of what Wendy said at the photo shoot party.
Yeah.
Where they were all kind of calling Ashley out for the Muppet thing. Where it was like, no, we have to stand up for each other. We have to be there for each other. So, I mean, I get it in that regard.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we decided that day that this is how we're going to behave. And then y'all went back on that.
Yeah.
So I get it.
I think Mia's right to feel a certain way.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought she handled it well. Also, Mia's new penthouse is 1,100 square feet.
It's literally it's literally smaller than our apartment.
Yeah.
Like I was like, girl.
We have an extra 100 on Mia right now, and she has kids.
Yeah. And, I don't know how she's doing that.
And she's a housewife, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then we go to Giselle's package about all of her stuff. So in the package, they include the part from the GNA party because they talk about her dad, being in the hospital because of brain cancer and all that stuff. And when Mia's trying to like get them to like go up to Giselle and say, hey, I'm thinking about you, whatever. And when he basically calls out, when my mom was in the hospital, she didn't give a flying. Well, because I want to be specific because Giselle is not specific later. When he says, when my mom was in the hospital, she was going around calling my mother evil, et cetera, et cetera. That is what she said at this party.
Yes.
So they come back in from the package. And before Andy even asks a question, Giselle goes, I just want to say first, that's a lie. That's a bold-faced lie, Wendy. I didn't know your mother was in the hospital.
That's irrelevant.
Nobody told me your mother was in the hospital.
Nobody cares.
When did I make fun of your mother? She then says, when did I make fun of your mother? And Wendy goes, you said that you talked to Jamal and you said that my mother was evil. In the clothing. And Giselle then goes, what are you talking about? Giselle, okay. You can say, I did not know your mother was in the hospital. That you can say. You can't say, I never called your mother evil. Because right. You did do that.
Yeah.
It's literally on tape. It's in the fucking episode when you were in the clothing store getting ready to go to Austin and you were talking about the whole witchcraft and blah, blah, blah. And you said, I called Jamal and said, is this normal? And he fucking told me all this. And then you said, it's just evil. It's all evil.
Yeah.
That you did that, Giselle.
Literally.
It's on fucking tape. Wendy goes, if we're going to try to move forward in any way, let's respect each other's parents and let's not be snide in our comments. And Giselle goes, absolutely. And stop lying when it comes to what I said about your mother, because I did not know your mother was in the hospital. And I stand by that. Okay, so what's your argument? Like, Wendy is making the point of, let's not talk about each other's parents. And you're right. Like, I didn't know she was in the hospital.
That's so irrelevant.
So if she wasn't in the hospital, you have the, like, it would be okay for you to call one of your fellow castmates' mothers evil?
No, the point is that she is yet again moving the goalpost to an argument that Wendy never made.
That's the thing. Wendy never said that.
And because Wendy's issue was, this was particularly difficult for me because I knew my mother was in the hospital, and then I hear back that you are disparaging her behind my back.
Right.
Like, that's what she's saying. She's not saying, how dare you, knowingly make fun of my mom when she's in the hospital.
And she was also talking about that there was never, like, in that moment at that party, Mia was trying to get Wendy and Candace to comfort Giselle about her father. And the point was, at a certain point, you knew my mother was in the hospital.
And you never apologized.
Never apologized. And you continue to make this a storyline about my mother being evil, doing witchcraft.
Yep.
So that is the fucking issue.
Yeah. And
I'm sorry, even if your father wasn't going through brain cancer, let's say he was, this was seasons ago, and if one of your castmates called your father evil, the idea that you wouldn't fucking, like, raise high hell, Giselle.
Oh, we would have had a fucking dissertation about how important he was to the civil rights movement. And I don't want to disparage that because he was fucking important to the civil rights movement.
But
that does not change that, like, you would have reacted on this fucking high horse on putting him on a pedestal when you are refusing to have the same sort of respect for anyone else's parents.
Right. But, and also, and that's the thing. It's not even just as simple as Giselle's father particularly. Giselle tries to make this argument later about kids are off limits. Why would they roll my eyes? I'm talking about my kid. But again, why is Wendy's mother not off limits? That is Wendy's family.
Right.
Again, in the words of Candace, the line is always moving.
And I'm just frustrated that Wendy is getting held accountable for something that her mother allegedly did.
Right.
That has been my point of contention all fucking season. I don't give a shit what her mom did. She's not a cast member.
Yeah.
She's not even a regular, like one of the husbands. She's shown up, besides this storyline where she's had to be here and defend herself, I want to say twice.
Yeah.
So I don't give a shit what she does, who she makes phone calls to. I don't care. It's not material to this show.
Yeah. Andy then asks Giselle about her father's passing. This is a pretty sweet moment. She talks about Karen being there for her and stuff like that. And it's a very sad, anyone who's lost a parent, it's an incredibly sad, you know, thing. Everyone's sort of like reacting to it. Candace tears up as well at one point. And Andy goes, I'm curious, why you're crying, Candace? I think honestly, Andy was trying to be like, this can be a moment to maybe be
right.
Like, there is humanity here, right?
Right.
You know, there's a certain level of humanity, even in terms of these issues, because even if I don't like that person, talking about like as sad it was to like see them take their last breath and all, like that's very, you know, Mia, I don't think was too serious, but she makes a joke like she cries when the wind blows left, which is so true about Candace.
True, but like,
and then Giselle goes, even when it's not about her.
What are we doing here? So wait, is it that we want Candace to care when the other cast members are going through things, or we don't because we don't like her? Because
I guarantee you, if Candace was emotionless, right?
And right, zoning, she would be called out for being a stone-faced bitch.
Yeah, it's like, oh, really? You're not going to react at all? And then when she cries, then it's still, you're making it about yourself.
So what do you fucking want from her?
It's just stupid.
The thing is it does. They don't want anything from her because they're going to want the opposite of whatever she gives them.
Right.
Because it's her. That's what it's about.
Yeah. And Candace just like tells Andy, like, I feel for her in terms of it. And Andy says, I mean, I just want to point out, with all your feelings aside, to Giselle, you have someone feeling a lot of emotions for what you expressed about your dad. And there's something really nice about that. And they kind of like me and Wendy are kind of like, we see what you're doing, Andy. We see what you're putting up with, you're putting down. And Andy's like laughing about it and all that. And Giselle's like rolling her eyes because it's now suddenly not about her. I'm just, again, I can't, like, I said this last week, I don't know how you can objectively look at the just all the stuff from this reunion and not understand Giselle is the problem in terms of the group not moving forward.
Yep.
Wherever you stand, right, wherever you're standing in the argument, the reason the group can't move forward is Giselle.
Period. And even I will even go so far as to say, the reason that Robin won't let things go forward is because of Giselle. Robin would not be a problem on this cast if Giselle was gone.
Yeah. Because she would follow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andy asked about Grace going to college, and Giselle talks about how she's doing well. Andy then asks, Karen, do you think that you should have taken a stronger stand towards Candace and Wendy when they made faces at each other, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Karen goes, I love that she started with, I am not responsible for any of these women and their actions. I'm like, I love that she was like, I'm going to use Ashley's argument.
Yep.
Like, so you're not going to make me the like added part of this.
Right.
First off, you know, can I in hindsight stand up and beat the table? Yes. But in no way am I responsible. And then she goes, to be honest, I've seen everyone make faces in this group. And especially when there is a discord, which is fucking true.
Yeah.
That like the idea that Giselle and Robin don't make faces and like do like, they do it all the fucking time. And Giselle goes, I was talking about my daughter. Why would anyone be making any sort of face? I cracked up so much. Candace then goes, I regret greatly that. And Karen goes, good. She's going to apologize. Awesome. I've mended the group. The grand dame has mended the group. But then Candace finishes, I regret greatly that Giselle would try to weaponize once again her children to make Candace and Wendy look like we are evil people. And Karen's face just like, are you fucking kidding me? But she's right there.
I cackled.
And then this pissed me. This got Twitter up in an uproar too, and rightfully so, I feel. Wendy then goes, the last part that I would like to say, something that you didn't see was that I congratulated Giselle on Grace going to college and on where specifically her daughter was going to college. And Candace goes, oh, I did as well. And we know for a fact I don't know for a fact that Wendy did this necessarily. I know for a fact Candace did, because in the episode in the dinner where they were rolling their eyes, when Giselle first brings up that Grace is going to college, Candace says, oh, congratulations. She does say that.
Right.
So let's make that clear. And then Wendy goes, I even said to her, you know, is her daughter going to be an AKA? And Andy goes, I wish we would have shown that. Which, yeah, blame your production crew. But like, again, this is where I also said last week, the production crew is at fault. But then Giselle goes, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. And Candace goes, yes, it did. Giselle goes, nope, didn't happen. Didn't happen. Wendy, if you pay attention, Wendy goes, that happened in Austin. So it happened on the Austin trip.
Right.
At some point. And then Andy then goes, they say that they don't have it, meaning the production team that's in his ear. And when he goes, they don't have it? And Giselle goes, because it never happened. And if it happened, they would have it on tape. It didn't happen. I believe it fully happened. Yeah. I believe it fully fucking happened. I don't trust this fucking production
at all.
100%. They've proven themselves both here and on Atlanta to not be fucking trustworthy on things.
100%.
I could honestly believe Eric burned the tape at some point before he left. That's a joke. But I'm not trying to be I'm not trying to be a stan about it. I'm trying to think rationally.
Why would she bring it up?
Exactly. Why Wendy? You can say a lot of things about her, but she's not a fucking idiot. Okay. Why would anyone bring up that they said something on camera, mic'd up? And at one point, her and Candace are like, roll the tape, basically.
Yeah.
Why would they do that if there was no tape of it? Why would they intentionally put egg on their face like that?
Yeah.
I believe they have it.
I believe it too. 100%.
And so, like, I just cannot. This is where, again, it's going to be he said, she said, whatever. So it's like you look like a conspirator sometimes in these moments. But I really do feel Giselle is protected by this network. I think she's protected by this production company.
Mm-hmm.
I think like it's pretty blatantly obvious.
Well, and it's getting to the point where if I was on Housewives, I would spend every fucking scene with my phone face down on the camera doing an audio recording.
Right.
It's like, oh, you don't have it? Great. I've got audio recording of when that happened. Yeah, because I was recording it when we were doing it. Because I know you fucking shady ass bitches behind the camera like to lose shit.
Yeah.
So we'll just play it right here. I've got it. Oh, you don't want to even include this in the reunion? Fine. Yeah. I'll put it on Twitter.
I just would encourage people to be like, what is the logical reason for Wendy to bring that up if Wendy knows she never said that?
And Giselle was pretty damn adamant about, nope, didn't happen, for her not to be involved in the deletion of that scene.
Sure. There's that. Andy then asked Giselle about Jason. At this point, Candace and Wendy were so like stone-faced because this whole segment was fucking stupid to me. I am now in the, like when she was detailing things, I'm now in the full camp of Jason was just her season boyfriend.
Yep.
Who like she trotted around to be on camera and that's about it. Cause none of this makes sense to me. Andy goes, do you have rules in terms of Jason? Like don't embarrass me. And Giselle goes, Jason and I talked and you know, about don't have any bullshit on social media, but you're free to do what you have to do. As am I. My problem is like, and I saw someone bring this up online. If this is a casual, you're allowed to date whoever you want to date and have sex with. I'm allowed to date whoever I want to date and have sex with. You know, you're long distance in that way. So it's not official. It's not, you know, we're not exclusive by any means. Why the fuck would you bring him around your children?
Right. And why the fuck are you policing his social media? So now he's not allowed to take pictures with someone else that he's dating, right. But he's allowed to be all over reality TV on your arm. Thing.
You would just, if like, it's like, so I don't have to like answer questions, but you could just come out and say, we're not exclusive.
Right.
We have fun every once in a while, but we're not exclusive.
Right.
And if you say that and Jason says that,
then who gives a shit?
Right. So it makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And well, I actually think that's the only reason she's saying the whole like embarrassed because Andy then brings up, so there were photos of Jason kissing a blonde woman, which I showed you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of this blonde woman. Giselle goes, he called me and told me before I saw it. Well, that's convenient.
Well, and what's also nasty about that, you're not allowed to post somebody else on social media. So does that mean that you're not allowed to actually get serious about somebody else?
Right.
So you're allowing, so you are at that point basically saying, you have to be loyal to me. We are together in a committed relationship.
But only on
but
one
you
end.
Can fuck around with other people.
Yeah.
But we are the couple. Because that's the only one that you're allowed to show off.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to be seen out with another woman. You're not allowed to post pictures online with another woman. Like, so y'all are a lot more serious than you're trying to act like.
Right.
Or maybe it was just the bullshit. So it's one of those two. Pick one.
Yeah. NECA then asks Giselle, are you seeing other men currently? And Mia goes, yeah. Because she knows.
Yeah.
Which I love Mia doing that. But like, again, like she's just going to have another man next season. It's like,
mm-hmm.
like Monique said, bringing a different man up into the reunion every freaking year. Like,
she's got a Rolodex of dicks.
Yeah.
You know? Which is fine.
Yeah.
That's lovely. I'm just not shaming her for it. Just be honest about it.
Candace has her package with all of her storyline stuff. Candace talks. Luckily, the lump that she talked about on her breast that through the season shrank, so there's no need to sort of go any further. And she's really relieved about that. So good stuff in there. Annie asked about the Drew Sidora topic, about her kind of like being like, oh, let's go with someone else instead of Drew Sidora. And Candace goes, so I do business a certain way, and when I want to do business with someone that a friend knows, I go to the friend first, and that wasn't done, so it kind of left a weird taste in my mouth. And Andy points out, this is kind of like the Katy Perry, Taylor Swift thing, where the whole backup dancers were stolen, and
right.
That's what Bad Blood was about, because I guess they didn't know that, but I feel like that was common knowledge.
Yeah. I mean, Taylor's pretty open about what she writes her songs about.
Sure.
Like, to the point that we have a laundry list of boyfriends and can connect each one of those to the song that's about them.
Yeah. I wonder what Drew's response would be to what Candace said.
I don't know. I think Drew's going through a lot right now.
Sure.
So maybe she just is putting that on the back burner.
Yeah. Annie then asked about the lawsuit that Michael filed, and now it's been, like, Candace has won the lawsuit, so everything's good in terms of that regard. Andy then asks a viewer question. Carmen from Washington says, Ashley, you know you knew all the details of the lawsuit. Michael's still financing your lifestyle, so you were hoping to get some of the money from that too. Like, which, duh.
Here's the thing. I think Ashley is smarter than Robin. She saw Robin out here talking about shit when things weren't settled in court. And, you lost your thing.
Yeah.
Your shit went sideways because you opened your mouth. I'm not opening my mouth.
Exactly.
Which is exactly what Candace pointed out on the season.
Yeah. Ashley goes, I didn't know anything about this case in any capacity. And no, I did not stand to gain anything financially. And
he's paying all your bills.
Yeah.
So if he has
by
money,
definition,
like, that's a financial gain for you, because even if you're not getting any of the actual cut of the settlement, it makes him more solidified to be able to continue to take care of you.
Right. So that doesn't really hold water for me
at all.
And Candace goes, you know, my mom was also convinced that you knew, and I don't think that you knew anything. And I said, like, mom, it's fine. Like, what? I am very fascinated that, and I don't even necessarily agree with that, Candace kind of gives Ashley a little bit of a pass.
I feel like Candace has such a blind spot when it comes to Ashley, because Ashley is one of the worst offenders on this cast about moving in snaky, shady ways.
Yeah. And it's like Candace, I guess, on the season was more about, I'm not going to speak about the lawsuit with her presence, because naturally you could communicate that to Michael.
Right.
But to say that, like, she didn't know necessarily, but I mean, to give her the benefit about the doubt about not knowing the details of the lawsuit, it's like, I would be honestly curious if someone to ask Candace now that she's out of the show, why were you so, like, to Ashley.
I cannot imagine that she had her fingers up in between them toes and didn't know all his business about this lawsuit.
Right.
Every goddamn night you're rubbing his feet and you don't know none of these details.
Oh,
absolutely not. I don't believe it. I do not believe it, because Gollum talks about the ring. Gollum wants his precious back. He wants to win the lawsuit.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I'm just saying, this man does not shut up about shit when he's fired up about it.
Also possible episode title, Gollum Talks About the Ring. Andy then is like, okay, so let's get into sort of the breakdown of the friendship that you and Robin had and what sort of went wrong. And he specifically says, now that we're at the reunion, we can break the fourth wall. And which, but like, it's been broken all season, I feel, kind of.
That fourth wall was a shattered, you know, like the, how they've got that shattered glass on the Vanderpump, stuff. That's the fourth wall on Potomac. Like, the whole storyline is about shit that happens online. Come on.
Right.
Like, there's no fourth wall.
Andy asks, Andy then asks, Robin, did you feel like she was coming after your job? And Robin goes, what I felt when I read her tweets and the Variety article and everything else, I felt she was being critical of my job. That's just not something that you do as a friend. Candace then goes, so I think one of the things that has been missing from this whole thing is that there is a timeline in terms of all of this. And I am so glad that Candace made the point to really reroute this in terms of, like, this is what actually happened in terms of the breakdown of this. She says, basically, like, we filmed the reunion for last season around, like, January 19th. Like, around the 23rd, I had replied to one of Robin's posts of her in her reunion hairstyle, and I said, like, long hair, like, ooh, cute.
And for those of y'all who do not know this, in the black community, you just point something out, and that's a compliment.
It's like, yes, purple top.
Yes, purple top. Ooh, high heels.
Yeah.
That's a compliment. That is a thing.
Yeah.
That's why that made sense for any of our people who were not versed in the black community and the way that they communicate.
Yeah. And so Candace responds to, like, Robin's thing of, like, long hair. Robin then replies, probably makes me look even more like a white adjacent looking woman. So can't imagine that's a good thing. So clearly some, like, passive aggressive thing or whatever.
But also, black women can't have long hair.
Yeah. Apparently.
Okay.
Robin then goes, so this was after the reunion, you know, her comments about Giselle online being white adjacent and stuff, that also hit me hard as well. Cause keep in mind, Candace had never called Robin white adjacent. Anytime she said, like, you're white looking ass, white, she was always speaking about Giselle.
Right, because it was always in relation to the accusations against Chris.
Yeah, and it, just like Robin were to do, she takes Giselle's pain as her own because they have one brain.
Apparently.
Like, at this point. And then Candace then...
Except when it comes to Juan.
Yeah. Candace then breaks down further that Robin makes that comment about, like, probably, you know, look white adjacent and all that stuff passive aggressively. Candace then replies, are you mad at me? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Robin read it, gave no response. This was in January. Then March comes around and Canada Girl first comes out with her claims against Juan.
Right.
Before Robin said anything. And then Candace then texts Robin something to the effect of, I just want to know that we're thinking about you. I'm really sorry that you're going through this, and I'm really sorry your family is going through this. Robin read it. Robin did not respond. And then, days later, Robin goes on her fucking podcast, on her fucking Patreon, says that it's real, and does her spin story. And Candace is just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What the actual fuck?
Yep.
And I'm just so glad that Candace did that, because if you were to just watch the season, they really make it seem in the structure that the producers did, in the structuring with the receipts and timeline and all that stuff, they make it seem like Candace went on a tweet storm about Robin being insincere about the Juan Canada Girl stuff on her Twitter. And then Candace texted Robin, are you mad at me? That's not what happened.
Right. I would also like to point out, I know we did it when it happened on the show, but I would also like to point out that, like, one of the two tweets that they highlight as evidence of her going after Robin
was before
all of this happened.
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with, and in fact, wasn't even about Robin, if I remember correctly. It was
about Giselle.
It was about Giselle. It had nothing to do with Robin, had nothing to do with the Juan situation, because no one knew about it because it was in November.
Yeah. So this is what I talk about in terms of production being up their ass this season.
Yeah. It's blatant favoritism.
Candace then goes, I tweeted what I tweeted. It hurt you. So I will apologize for hurting you because that's not what I wanted to do. Owning it.
Yeah.
Fully owning it. Fully giving Robin the apology of, I hurt you by making all those tweets. I am sorry for making all those tweets. Doing exactly what she has been asked to do, both at this reunion and throughout the season, owning it completely, and no but, nothing.
Right.
Robin then goes, because she got her apology, but of course Robin has to still hate Candace. She goes, okay, so I did not respond to your message because that colorism conversation is so uncomfortable to me. And Candace goes, I understand. Like, being very, like, conciliatory. Robin goes, it is an extremely uncomfortable thing to be accused of. I've never experienced that in my life, which is not even fucking true. Like, they say things that are just not fucking true. Yeah. Katie Ross accused you of it in season one.
Yep.
Like, oh my God, whatever. Anyways, so, like, and then Robin goes, and I just didn't know how to... And then starts crying. And I was like, if you don't get the fuck out of here with this, I hated it so much. Why the fuck? Like, the fact that this was just left to go on of just being like, Robin's the victim because she was accused of being a colorist, which she never actually was.
Yeah.
They just had a colorism conversation. And the only time Robin got brought up in the colorism conversation wasn't about anything Robin did that was colorist. It was Candace saying, if you watch back the reunion and that conversation, I have had segments, Candace saying, I have had segments devoted to how I'm aggressive, how I'm angry, how I get into fights, how I antagonize people.
With my word choice. And they continue that this season.
Right. But there are multiple instances of Robin getting aggressive, going into Ashley's restaurant, putting her finger in Ashley's face.
Yep.
The stuff with the umbrella with Monique.
Yep.
And it's not about, it's just to say that was not given the same treatment that Correct. I was given.
Correct. Because of colorism. Not because Robin was actively going out there and doing colorist things, but because Robin has a certain privilege.
Right.
Because of her adjacentness to whiteness, she does benefit from white privilege.
Yeah. Robin goes, it was not only hurtful to be on the receiving end of being accused of being a colorist, which I think is horrible, but also when the stuff with Juan came out, all of y'all talked about it, but none of y'all accused me of plotting, of lying, a cover up, none of that. That's not true.
Karen brought it up.
Karen
too.
Thought you were lying. Karen thought you were lying and keeping shit off the show. Like, fully, like, that was talked about.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not the link in terms of, like, with the Chris thing, but that's also Candace talking from her personal fucking experience of what she went through last season.
And even then, she, if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure she framed it around the, this is what it feels like. It yeah. feels like you did this in order to.
Right.
It was never a direct accusation.
No.
It was always a, it, the timing seems suspect. It seems weird that you suddenly switch sides to Giselle's side when this shit is happening in the background.
Right.
That's what she said.
Candace takes this very calmly, which I appreciated. She doesn't like get emotional about it. She goes, to go back to the colorism conversation, I grew up in a household where talking about race and color and the diaspora was commonplace. So for me, talking about any aspect of race is not uncomfortable for me, because Robin saying it was uncomfortable for her.
Right.
I mistakenly thought that you all thought that way as well. Because remember, there was the whole dialogue of them having to agree to the conversation even happening at the reunion. They, you know what I mean? Like, they all had to have a buy-in of saying, I am okay with this conversation happening. I think it would be important for this to happen, but I want
right.
everyone to be on the same page in terms of comfortability. And apparently you weren't comfortable about it. And is what Candace is saying here. As she's saying this, Giselle goes, I don't have a problem talking about colorism. I'm a member of a black sorority. I went to a black, like, interrupting to be in.
Right.
And Candace goes, yes, and you will talk about race and color when it benefits you. Like, Giselle, this isn't even about you.
Yeah.
And also, Candace didn't say you were uncomfortable. She's saying, Robin is saying right now she was uncomfortable with this colorism conversation.
Right. I would also like...
So shut up!
I would also like to point out that in the middle of this, there's a break to commercial.
Yeah.
And there's a commercial for like a diabetes drug or something. And it's starring Anthony Anderson. He's known for being the dad on Blackish with Tracee Ellis Ross.
Yeah.
Like, so great pairing.
Before the commercial, it ends with Robin going, this was an uncomfortable conversation for me. I was really uncomfortable with the colorism conversation. And then her crying.
And then sobbing. And then it cuts out to the splash screen of, you know, the title for the show. And then it immediately goes to this close-up of Anthony Anderson's mouth. And he goes, this making you uncomfortable? Good.
Yeah.
And we cackled. It was so good. I cackled. I was screaming. We literally stopped, went back. I recorded it and I immediately tweeted the video.
Yeah.
It was like, this is so stupid. This commercial placement is the best thing on television right now.
Giselle goes, that has nothing to do with you going on social media and insinuating that we are colorists. And Candace goes, I did not insinuate you are colorists. That is your interpretation. Because she never called them colorists. She said that there was colorism on the show. And here's the thing, is Candace is talking about production.
Right.
And then Mia goes...
Well, and she's also not just talking about production. She's also talking about public backlash.
Yeah.
Because Candace gets so much public backlash because she is a darker-skinned woman.
Yeah.
You know, Wendy gets a lot of that. I think a lot of the public backlash to NECA was probably in that same vein as well.
Yeah.
Right? Like, but we don't really get that for Giselle and for Robin. In fact, we have entire Twitter accounts that are like major within the Bravo sphere, right? That are devoted to supporting Robin and Giselle.
Right.
So like, we cannot talk about these things as if they are on equal footing. They simply are not. And that is what Candace is saying here. Nobody is saying that Giselle is actively attacking these darker skinned women because they are darker skinned.
Darker skin. Yeah. And
nobody is saying that of Robin either. Nobody is saying that of Ashley. Yet, here we are in a situation where these three women, specifically Giselle, tangentially the other two, right, are actively ruining this show. And the blame constantly gets put onto Candace and Wendy.
Yeah, that's literally the primest example of it, I feel. And I get people can have their opinions, but again, I also think you can have your opinions on the dynamics of the storylines, right? While also observing who is moving things forward and who isn't.
Right.
And I don't see the argument that it's Candace and Wendy doing that.
I simply cannot see that point of view.
Mia then goes, well, question, did you ever say that they're not colorists? And Wendy goes, she said it at the last reunion. And I love that they played the clip of that, which it was Andy saying in the lead up, you made the point to be clear that none of your cast members are colorists, and Candace not. So she made it clear that. And
right. I also love that that's the standard being held against Candace. But a few seconds ago, AKA last episode.
Yeah.
It was all we could do to get Giselle to admit that she said he made me go into the
exactly.
hotel room. Okay. So, and she still, I don't think, ever really admitted to it, even when they fucking played it. And production was like, we have this.
And
that's what
NECA
she said.
Tried to get her to say, just say Chris didn't sexually assault you. And she wouldn't even do that.
No, she wouldn't.
So what the, yeah, it's so hypocritical.
This is what we're talking about. This is the unequal treatment.
Yeah, Robin's like, it was already out of control on Twitter, though. But that's not Candace's fucking fault. Anyways, Wendy ate here. Wendy goes, if we step back for a second, and if this was a black and white conversation, it's almost equivalent to someone saying, man, I'm so hurt that you called me racist. But when is the conversation ever going to shift to say, why do you think or believe for that to be true for me to be a racist? Why is the person on the receiving end not centered and their feelings are not centered?
Right. Well, and it's again, I feel like we've seen this conversation echoing around Bravo for a while. It's why is the accusation of being a bigot, whatever flavor of bigot you're going to say,
worse
than being a bigot?
Yeah.
If you are sitting here with privilege and you are told, hey, this thing that you did, this hurt me because it was bigoted towards me, that it's your job to then sit with that discomfort.
Yeah.
I don't care how fucking uncomfortable it makes you. It is your job to sit in that discomfort, feel it, live in it, understand where that's coming from. Because I don't know if y'all out there don't know this, you don't get to have an opinion on whether they are right or wrong.
Yeah.
You don't get, they are right. Period. End of story. So if someone tells you this action was bigoted towards me.
Yeah. Listen.
Listen.
Yeah.
And then change your actions accordingly.
Wendy then goes, because if you're not going to talk about why they believe this phenomenon exists, then let's not talk about the phenomenon itself.
Right.
And Karen then goes, guys, there is no better group of black women on the Bravo network to talk about that than us. And I love Karen, but I'm glad that Wendy checked her in this moment and goes, no, actually, that's very incorrect. Because if you want to talk about colorism, then you need to have the range to talk about it. And a lot of people on this couch, whether you want to admit it or not, do not have the range. And I will stop it there. And yeah. And they didn't have the range last season because Giselle, Robin, and Ashley were getting defensive then and intentionally missing points. We're intentionally skewing the conversation about, like, again, you're not calling me a colorist, right? Like, just let it be known that I'm not being called a colorist.
Why is that the focus?
Yeah.
Why is that the focus? Like, why can't we just focus on not hurting people?
Yeah.
Why can't that be the focus?
NECA then turns to Robin and goes, what's the reason that you guys are colorist? And Robin goes, I don't know, because anytime we have a conflict with a brown skin person, we're colorist. But Karen and I have beef. Ashley and I have beef. No, again, this is my point, and this is why it was also so frustrating last season too. You don't listen to anything anyone's saying. No one ever said you are fighting with me and that makes you a colorist.
It sounds so similar to all these people on Fox News saying, oh, so I have an argument with a black person and all of a sudden I'm racist.
Yeah. It's like, that's what you literally sound like. I'm sorry.
And you don't see how you're playing into, like, do you not hear yourself?
Yeah.
Your father was a civil rights activist and you don't see how you're part of the problem now?
It's honestly sadder than anything. It's like,
it's disgusting. It's honestly disgusting. And not that I think that she's disgusting, because that's not, like, but those, it just, it really turns my stomach to see someone fall so far from the legacy that their parents set for them.
Right. Andy then goes, so I'm assuming there's no place for the two of you to go right now. And Candace goes, look, worse has been done. And the way Robin goes, worse has been done. Yes, worse has been done, Robin. Like, do you really think that what your issue with Candace is the worst thing that's happened on this fucking show in 8 seasons? No, it's not.
It's not.
And Candace says, and if this is a friendship ending after everything that we have sat on this stage over the last 8 seasons and watched be done to her, so be it. If this is apparently too far of a line for you, where literally I've apologized for you and you won't accept my apology, whatever, if it's just like cut and dry at that point, then that is fucking sad, because there's been so much fucking worse shit said on this stage by different people who can then move on with each other.
Yeah. Well, and I also loved how Candace, in that, it is clear that Candace is like, you can walk this back anytime.
Yeah.
If you want to, right there, say, let's try to fix this, I'm here to play ball.
But I'm not.
But I'm done.
I've
after
given
today.
You all I can give. That's it.
if you are done after today, then I will be putting no more energy in this, and we will be done.
NECA then they go to a break, but before that, NECA turns to Robin and goes, are you okay with the apology that, you know, you did receive an apology? I do think I'm starting to like NECA slightly
a lot more. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Robin goes, but she still believes that I plotted on her husband, the way Candace goes, child, let it go. Like, and just walks off. I'm so
Karen's so tired.
They're getting ready for the guys to come up on stage, and they're all getting done up again backstage. The way that also Giselle says hi to all the husbands except Chris, like, make sure to pass by. It's so stupid. But then NECA's getting her makeup checked up. She goes, you know, I've been really good at not engaging on social media or attacking, because I was under the impression that the reunion's my time to say what I want to say. You know, I've been attacked, I've been whatever. Mia goes, you have to say that. If you don't say that, it's going to kind of look like you're watching the show. I love Mia being like, okay, this is a girl.
Somebody should have told that to Anna Marie.
Well, someone should have told that to Ashley. NECA's contributing more than Ashley this reunion. Ashley's like mute. And I'm like, you know, man, it's really bad. Ike then goes, what you don't want to do is allow anyone to stop you. So if they try to interrupt you, say, hey, can I speak? Like, to give his wife advice. And NECA goes, you are not helping me. The way she does not put up with anything from him. Not even his bullshit, just him being normal. It's just like, stop it. And then she goes, you are either here to support me or you can go back with Juan Dixon wherever he is.
Bitch,
that was a great drag.
That was so fucking good.
Again, NECA, you can maybe come back next season. I still want to see.
I'm cool with that,
because next week I think we're getting into the NECA Wendy stuff. So like, we'll see how that goes. But like, okay, I was like, a little bit of promise here. Every once in a while.
Yeah.
The men then join the stage. Oh my god, you noted when Andy goes, because Ike is in kind of like more traditional Nigerian
girl. This was not cute. Andy, like...
Well, the look was cute.
Well, yeah, the look was cute, but Andy was like...
I gotta say something, Ike. I want to steal your outfit. And then they're like,
and I'm like, not the white man telling the Nigerian man, I want to steal your cultural outfit. Appropriation much? Really? Yeah. In 2024, this is what we're doing? Okay.
This is where my MVP... And this might spoil my top and bottom for this week. My MVP of this reunion then comes in, which is Chris Bassett. And oh, it's good. Andy goes, Chris, we didn't see you a lot this season. Was that by design? And Chris goes, yeah. Andy goes, you don't want to be in the mess? And Chris goes, I mean, if I'm not wanted around, I don't need to be around. It's okay. He was so like chill and calm and just like,
played, but also pointed and shady.
Yeah. Andy knows what he means, but he goes, are you not wanted around by Candace? And Candace goes, oh no, I want him around. But when you have a group of women who do everything in their power to push him out with lies, why would he be comfortable coming around?
Period.
Andy goes, Chris, are you still on the mind that Robin was in on a plot against you last year? And Chris goes, honestly, after last year's reunion, I'm tired of talking about it. I haven't mentioned it since last reunion. Sorry, the three subsequent interviews that aired after the reunion, which, by the way, I loved, because they're probably, because Robin was also being like, Chris was also saying, it's like, and I love that he clarified. So those were interviews I filmed prior to the reunion, but that aired afterwards. So let's keep that clear.
Right.
In terms of everything. I haven't talked about it. I haven't tweeted about it. I just don't really give a fuck.
Yeah.
I'm good.
And honestly, I haven't seen a tweet from him relating to the show at all.
No, he's still just doing his stuff on Instagram with his like cooking stuff. And
yeah. Andy, talks about sports on Twitter. That's about it.
Yeah. Andy brings up the woman with the fake rumor. It's like, she said you had an affair with her and that you told her to get an abortion or what, like something like whatever. Andy goes, and she's like, what was that about? But then she said she lied about it. Have you ever met this person? Chris goes, no, I've never met this person. There's like 3 seconds of silence, and then Robin's like, so the screenshots are like, and you could tell she's just like, is this my moment? She was like I said last week, you're doing a really terrible job of showing that Candace that you weren't plotting.
Yeah.
I honestly would have really love for Candace to just be like, seems real invested for somebody who's like not, you know, as is not plotting or anything, right?
Well, and it's so obvious that they had like planned attacks to make.
Yeah.
And even though this attack was shot down earlier and was clearly disproven and, you know, she was made to look a fool before, she decided to bring it up again because it's all she's got.
Right. Chris goes, I've never met this person. Robin goes, so she Photoshopped screenshots. Chris goes, I'll say it to you one more time. I've never met this person.
And she was like, okay, but that doesn't mean that you didn't send screenshots. He goes, I know nothing about screenshots.
Yeah. And all like Chris goes, she said it happened. Then she said she lied about it. And Robin goes, but then she like retracted it. And Chris goes, so again, I didn't. I have nothing to say on this. And then even Gordon off the side goes, it speaks to credibility. Because everyone's just like, this woman's not fucking credible.
No, she's not.
Like, you can't change your story four different times. And then, like, whatever. Andy goes to Candace, you had expressed that these ladies were behind the rumor, meaning Giselle and Robin. Candace goes, I don't know that to be true, but I am so distrusting at this point of particularly Giselle that I don't put anything past her.
Yeah.
Which I think is the way to, like, I don't have any evidence of it, but I would not be surprised.
It sounds very similar to what Robin said on Reasonably Shady about the Chris rumor, which was, I know enough about Chris to believe that this is true. Exactly.
And trust me, we know enough about Giselle.
We've seen 8 seasons of this bullshit at this point.
Giselle goes, so that is not true. And the girl even came out and said, please keep Giselle out of it. I don't know her. Candace goes, she said a lot of things. And because that's the thing. Giselle's acting like she can't, like she's missing the part where there was a DM that someone sent her about, like, hey, is Giselle, did Giselle set you up to this? And the girl said, yes, she did. And then she posted an Instagram post saying that I've never met Giselle, never spoken to her, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Leave Giselle out of it. But Giselle, you're leaving out the middle part where she said, where, like, she backtracked. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, the problem is that Giselle seems to think that this woman is a liar. Unless she's saying what I want her to say that I think is true, as opposed to what everyone else is saying is that, okay, well, nothing she says is trustworthy. She accused Giselle, she accused Chris, and she's backed out on all of it. So, like, I don't believe her either direction. Now, does that mean that some of what she said might be true? Maybe, but what I know of Chris's character and what I know of Giselle's, I'm just saying, I know one thing is more likely, and it's not the Chris stuff. Yeah.
And I love how Chris countered this. Chris goes, much like you feel how you feel, she feels how she feels. People can feel all they want to feel. And Giselle goes, that's not a feeling. That's what she said. And Chris goes, Candace said she feels that way, meaning about how she wouldn't be surprised if Giselle did this. Much like you said, you feel the way about what happened 2 years ago. People feel how they feel. And Giselle goes, very good. That's fine. Like, cutting him off. And like, Giselle loves to overtalk, by the way.
Yeah.
It's very Sandoval. People feel how they feel. So you want to be acknowledged for your feelings. Let her be acknowledged for her feelings. And Giselle goes, very good. Great. And then Chris goes, fantastic. Next question. That part.
He was so ready for this.
And at that point, I think Candace was like, I'm going to give him his baby. Like, that is my man. I love that Candace, after the reunion, posted the meme of Nene and Greg at that one reunion. That honk the horn on their ass, Greg. Toot, toot, boop, boop. Bam. Like, that's my man.
R.I.P. Greg.
Oh, I also want to know, on the rewatch, when this moment happened, I had a revelation, right?
Oh, yes.
I had a revelation of what I wish happened.
To the point that he came running out of the bedroom and goes, you have to make sure that I bring this up on the podcast because my mind is blown.
Yeah. So, Candace being like, I don't have evidence of this, but I wouldn't be surprised if Giselle was in on it with this woman. And Giselle saying, I never spoke to this woman, et cetera, et cetera. I've not contacted her, whatever. I wish that Candace pulled a Giselle from Ultimate Girls Trip when the whole Classe Azul bottle drama happened.
Yep.
And what did Giselle do at that fucking lunch table when she brought it up? She said, you're suspect number one, suspect number two, and Candace, can I search your room? And Candace's like, no, you're not going to search my room. Well, you're the lead suspect, Candace. You are the suspect. You definitely stole the bottle. If I was Candace and Chris, I would be like, oh, so you claim you never communicated with this woman. Giselle, will you give us your phone? Can we look through your phone to make sure that there's no communication that you have had with this woman whatsoever? And if Giselle's like, no, I'm not going to give you my phone, go, suspect number one, you're the lead suspect.
Yep.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly.
Taste of her own fucking medicine.
The difference, though, is that Candace probably would have been right. Whereas on Ultimate Girls Trip, it was never Candace, it was Heather.
Yeah, sure. Andy goes, I thought you and Giselle kind of cleared the air last year and we're cool, but we're kind of back to square one. And Chris goes, I didn't say anything. Like I said, nothing more to say on the matter. I left at the reunion last year. It is what it is. It is very interesting. Some people say that Candace needs to be responsible for her words, but to allow someone to say, I used the wrong word, and we're just going to say, okay. Checking Andy.
There was never an apology made.
Yeah. It's like, oh, she said the wrong word? Moving on. But we can devote segments to Candace's word choices.
Years.
That's interesting. And I love that Andy proves his point, because then he goes, all right, so Juan's not here today, and just moves on, right? So this is where I talk about, like, getting to the core of matters.
Right.
Like, if you really want to repair, if you want to actually repair things, you have to then follow that up, Andy.
Yeah.
And actually hold Giselle to the fire a little bit.
Yeah.
But you're not going to do that.
Whatever. No.
So he goes, so Juan's not here today. What do you think of him not showing up today, guys? And then there's, like, silence, like, no one's answering. And Candace goes, they don't care. No one cares. Like, honestly. But Andy cares. And Andy goes, well, I mean, you've all been the subject of gossip and drama, and you've come to every reunion. Why is it important for you to come and support your wives? And Chris goes, I just want to be here. And then even Gordon goes, says, you know, even with all that's happened, I'm coming to support my wife. I mean, now ex-wife. And even Candace goes, I mean, y'all still married. But the look on Robin, I feel like there was a look on Robin's face of just like, I mean, here's the thing. She's swallowed any feelings up at this point. She's, you know, allowed Juan to do whatever. But like, yeah, like, Robin, aren't you embarrassed? Aren't you embarrassed right now, Robin?
Should be.
Gordon is literally getting a divorce from Mia, and he is still behind her at this reunion, at least in part as a support, right?
And I hate to give this
and
man...
And your man, you are supposedly in a happy marriage.
Yeah.
That's perfect, right? No issues. And your man can't even be behind you.
I hate to give this man any props, but when the accusations were flying against Michael Darby, where was he sat?
At the reunion.
At the reunion behind his wife.
Yeah. Andy mentions Gordon and all the, like, we're going to get into all the stuff with Mia. And Gordon then kind of, like, gets ahead of Andy and goes, so Andy, first of all, I appreciate the opportunity to address this. I'm excited actually to do this. And I know the fans have questions. I know this friend group has questions. But I want to share something with you that some of you may have suspected, but many of you probably don't know. And, like, Mia's crying, and, like, Gordon pulls out a tissue to cry. And it's, like, this is the big cliffhanger that we leave on in terms of the episode. I really, like, my instinct of what I think it is, I'm really sad if that is the case of what I won't get into it if it's not, because I don't want to put that out there. But, like, yeah, next week should be interesting when we really dive into the Mia Gordon stuff, which I think has been the best part of this reunion. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. That was Potomac for this week. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then when we come back, we're talking the newest episode of Summer House, Martha's Vineyard. Don't go anywhere.
Well, hello, friends. I'm your pal in the mainstream media.
And I'm the Riz.
And, you know, Riz, it takes years of strenuous, dedicated training before you're worthy to step inside a professional wrestling ring. But it takes even more time to develop complex, highly astute opinions about professional wrestling. Am I right?
That is correct. Yes. You know where we can find that?
Yes.
On the Wrestling Mayhem.
That's right.
I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin.
And if you're anything like us, you live your life out loud.
And when it comes to issues of discrimination and equity and outright bigotry, We use every platform we have to speak out against systems of oppression that perpetrate violence against marginalized groups.
That's why we are so proud to wear designs from the Survivors Know merch store. Their team has created designs that feature unapologetic, empowering, and survivor-centered messaging that range from mild,
like accountability is love and toxicity is not on the menu,
to a little more spicy,
like one of my favorites, fuck your laws, fuck your system, transformative justice now, which has a cute little happy flower on it.
Each design is available on a variety of items, from t-shirts and hoodies to bags, blankets, magnets, and even stickers. And as more items become available, the options will continue to grow.
100% of the proceeds go back into supporting the amazing work done at Survivors Know to support survivors, workers, and survivor advocates by organizing, challenging the status quo, and creating alternatives to the systems that fail us.
Support Survivors Know by shopping today at survivorsknow.threadless.com.
That's survivorsknow.threadless.com.
Sidekick Media Services. We are your sidekick in business for social media, video production, and more. Find out more at sidekickmediaservices.com.
Welcome back to A Gay and a Zimby. Let's head back to Massachusetts, where everyone is slipping and sliding and having a grand old time. That is, until the possibility of Phil and Mariah returning comes up. Cue the shitstorm on Summer House, Martha's Vineyard.
Literally a shitstorm. Summer House, Martha's Vineyard for this week. And this is where I think drama is amping up now.
Yes.
And so I'm excited for it. I mean, I love a good light, you know, time, but like also things are, you know, getting really invested.
Let's get some mess.
We pick up where we left off last episode, where Nick is talking to Jordan Summer when they're in their bed, being like, do I make you uncomfortable? I mean, right now? Yeah, kind of. Like, you're pacing around my bed.
I'm trying to take a nap. Go away.
And they're like, you get a little handsy sometimes. And Summer's like, you get close when you're drunk, essentially. And so I felt like Nick's confessional talking about this was a little like, this is the, like, they've absolved me from any, like, it's like a prepared statement a little bit.
Yep.
He goes, Summer and Jordan and I are close. You know, if you're my friend, just keep it 100 with me and tell me how you're feeling in that moment. The way I behave doesn't have any nefarious intent. On the other side of that coin, everyone's entitled to the way they feel, and I have respect for that.
Yeah. I still feel like in this moment, they were still like, they weren't being honest with him.
Right.
Because they were more worried about upsetting him. And it's like, why do women feel the need to protect men's egos so often?
Yeah.
Like, okay, we know why. Patriarchy, like misogyny, we know why. But like, God, it's so exhausting to see these women have to like dance around the fact that this man is inappropriate.
Well, and also even what they discussed in the car, it's like they don't ever have the moment where they're just like, we're worried about your girlfriend. Like,
right.
We don't think that you should be doing this if you have a girlfriend.
Right. It's not about you doing XYZ and that is inappropriate in and of itself. It is inappropriate in the context of you having a girlfriend that last season we didn't even find out about until halfway through the trip.
Right. Even the producer in Jordan's confessional asked, would you want your man being handsy with his friends? And she goes, no. Like, pretty bluntly. And she goes, he's not out here slinging D or cheating, but there are subtleties that say that he's not a man committed to a relationship.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I'm the kind of person that I'm also like touchy-feely with my friends.
Right. But if anyone ever was like,
if anyone was ever like, if you were ever to tell me that that made you feel uncomfortable,
sure,
I would change the way that I act.
Yeah.
But like, that's different. Like, it's also different as gay men, and I'm usually that touchy-feely with straight men or women.
Yeah.
Right? People that are not in my diaspora of dating pool.
Right.
It's like, so there's no threat.
But there's also
there,
a level
right?
of communication, and that's the other thing. It's like, I don't think they communicate. Like, yeah. By all means, she's, like, not understanding, like, what Nick is doing on these vacations.
And when he has a history of moving like a single man.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically last season, and trying to hook up with these girls, like, I now see it through that lens, you know? I now no longer trust normal friendship, touchy-feely type stuff as just friendship type stuff. It feels different because of this context.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Everyone's getting set up for Shanice's neon party that she's throwing. It's like a pool party. Because of course, of course it's a pool party. Shanice wants to be in her bikini.
Yeah.
And then in Shanice's room, she's calling her mom, Carla, to sort of like talk about the plan and like tells her about what Summer said the night before. This made so much sense about Shanice.
She read her to filth.
Well, Summer. Read Summer to filth. Yeah. Because it's like, Shanice talks to her confessor about like, you know, my mom is very just like down to earth and she's, you know, kind of where I got my personality from and all that stuff. And it really shows in the conversation because she's like, you know, Summer said I was like the worst dressed. Carla goes, does she feel you're her competition or something? And Shanice goes, well, I mean, look at me. And Carla goes, but tell her, hey, you want to act like you're 14? Your opinion don't count anyways, bitch.
Her mama is 10 toes down, standing on business.
She goes, she ain't no goddamn fashion designer. Maybe she dresses bad.
Like, her mom is so ride or die for her kid.
Yeah.
It's like, that is, like, that's really fucking cool. Like, you don't get parents who are that down for their kids.
Yes, I agree with that.
That often.
Now, I wonder what the relations... Here's my thing. I think it's very cool. I also think there's the topic that kind of came up last episode about, like, Shanice doesn't have in-depth conversations with people, and it's all very just, like, yeah. I'm fun, and I'm, you know, whatever. Like, I wonder if she was able to have that with her mother, because...
Well, she has talked about how her mom is her best friend, so yeah. I would assume so.
Maybe. Yeah. I want to know more, definitely.
Yes.
Carla goes... Blow it off. She ain't worth it. I probably would have knocked the shit out of her. Jesus Christ. And then Shanice tells her mom, okay, I got to go. I'm going to go on the slip and slide naked. And Carla goes, you can only get on there naked if Alex gets on there naked. This is where,
okay.
This is where I was like, I could never have this conversation with my mother.
No.
I don't care how close of friends we are.
No. Like, your mom is cool and chill as fuck, but she's not... that cool or that chill stuff. Like, I just no. There's a line.
We see as everyone's coming out, Jasmine has apple juice in a wine glass, which I like.
I mean, honestly,
like, they're really emphasizing like she's not drinking aspect. We see Noelle in the kitchen like flirting with Alex a little bit more. She's a very good flirter, but she's definitely actively flirting with Alex. Like,
yes.
And she's like, is your shoulder feeling better after the workout and stuff like that? You know, and like, oh, look, we're matching. Like, she's great at it, though.
Oh, yeah.
They all head outside to the pool and it's filled with like bubbles and they have a slip and slide. And like, mm-hmm. It's just a fucking, like, Shanice, of course, gets naked on the slip and slide because, mm-hmm. You know.
Shanice.
Yeah. Bria says their confessional. I love naked Shanice. At first, I was mad because it was in front of my man. But, you know, Simon isn't here, so I don't give a fuck. Live your life, Shanice. Let that coochie glow. And I'm like, if it glows, then maybe that's a problem.
But also, are you then going to have a problem with it again when your man gets here?
Oh, no. The minute Simon walks in the door and Shanice's top is off, Bria's going to throw a fucking fit.
Shanice is going to have to be in, like, a full head-to-toe, like, sleeping bag with the hood.
Yeah.
Like, maybe little holes for her hands to stick out, and that's about it.
They're getting to ready to play. Like, Amir's organizing this, like, slip and slide, flip cup, like, relay.
I still don't understand this shit.
Oh, I couldn't pay attention to the rules. But it starts raining really harder, and Jasmine goes, I need to protect my edges. And the way she breaks down her confessional, this is my hair plus somebody else's hair. If my hair gets wet today, it's going to take me an hour and a half from festivities tomorrow. That's black girl math.
The black girl math memes that were going around Twitter were phenomenal.
Oh, really? Was it becoming like trending?
Well, I mean, even Preston was tweeting with the screenshot from the. It was great. It was. I will say again, Preston is a great follow on Twitter.
Yeah,
he's hilarious.
By the way, Preston is engaged.
As yes,
we know today as we're recording. It broke in People, right?
Yeah, it happened earlier this week, but it broke in People today. People was there at the engagement. In Europe somewhere, I don't remember exactly where, but they were on a trip and People was there to take pictures and all of that.
Yeah. So they're playing the slip and slide flip cup and they're on teams or whatever. But at one point, Shanice just abandons her team mid game because her friend Hendrix has come up and so to greet her at the door. And they're like, what the fuck, Shanice? Like, we're like the competition.
Hendrix can wait.
Sure. He's very fine. I would say that.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
And he also brings his friend Christian. Shanice says that her and Hendrix have not slept together because he has slept with a friend of hers already. So again, this trend of just like, if you sleep with a friend of mine, you're like cut out.
It's, well,
like,
and Andy talks about it perfectly on the Watch What Happens Live. Like, you can't do that in the gay community. You will have no one left.
Right.
Like, it, we fuck everybody till we hook up, like until we actually like link up. This is a serious relationship, and then that's it. But like, until things are serious, until things are solidified, everybody and they daddy, we fucking.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
It's a rule of life. Team Amir ends up winning the competition. And Noelle then comes back out and introduces everyone to Alex, or excuse me, to Hendrix. And Noelle is like kind of flirting with Hendrix as well, like introducing herself. Alex's face the whole time is like very zoned in on like the conversation. Noelle's like, when's your birthday? And he's like, today. And Noelle goes, oh, you got to get foamed up because you're the birthday boy, and starts rubbing the fucking...
It's like, girl, we know what you're doing. We see it.
It's pretty clear. But she gets right on top of it. And Noelle, no, I mean, not actually. Well, we find out later, not actually. Noelle goes, has a tiny like cupcake or whatever, and goes, is this your birthday wish to have a bad bitch? And then the Lady in the Tramp, the cupcake.
I missed that.
Yeah, it's great. She, like, again, it's just her presence is very, like, confident and
yeah,
and
I really like her,
really sexy. Some of them like, it's so weird, half of them decide to like head out to the club even though it's like getting to like midnight.
They literally
whatever.
Are leaving the house at midnight.
I could never imagine, like,
I'm in bed. I may not be asleep for several more hours, but I'm in bed.
And it's like you're in a pool with like bubble and you're gonna change and all. Amir Leary goes, you guys don't want to go? And Jasmine goes, I'm 72. I am staying in and watching television, please. Noelle and Alex, before everyone leaves, is talking in the kitchen. And Noelle tells him, like, if you don't mind me asking, like, when was your last relationship? Alex goes, you know, this summer I was dating somebody. And Noelle's like, were you exclusive? And Alex is like, no, I just feel like I was trying to focus my energy, which is so fucking vague. And so Alex.
Yeah.
But also he says stuff about, doesn't he say later about like rushing too far into a relationship, like too quickly? And like, that's why he's like taking a break. I'm at the point, I was giving Alex a lot of the past last season and bleeding into this season. He is a little inconsistent for me.
Yeah.
In like following like his logic and timeline on.
Yes. Things. Well, him and Schwartz move in very similar ways. They have that chill, laid back thing, and then they never speak in any definites.
Right.
And so also everything is wishy-washy, and you're not quite 100% sure what he's saying and what he's not saying.
Yeah, and also doesn't differentiate between a date and a bang.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think that's all Alex wants on this trip.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, but he's also, like, halfway indulging on like an emotional connection with people,
right,
in order to like get to that point. And to me, that's messy as fuck. Like, yeah, you can't do that,
yeah,
you know, without hurting people. And then like Alex tells her, like, you bring really good energy to the house. And then there's this awkward moment where Summer walks into the kitchen to get like her charger or something, and they just go quiet because again, they're just so adverse to like,
yeah,
doing anything around Summer. Yeah, so some of them are going out to the club, and it just flashes back between like Shanice twerking and everyone just like dancing to like Jasmine in the house just being like, oh, like it's just like, it, honestly, I would be with Jasmine in that game. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I can't. You know me, like I can't go. I don't like clubs for the most part. I can't like. I get tired real quick.
Back when I was in college, and I'm not saying that this was healthy behavior at all, but like I could do like the house parties that would go on for hours, mm-hmm, and everybody's getting drunk and that sort of thing. But that got real old the second I hit 20.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just like, oh, I don't do this anymore. This is a lot of work. It's a lot of effort.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because then, even then, when, because you got to, then you got to walk home.
Yeah, it's the come down, right? It's
yeah.
Like the, yeah, no.
It's like not worth it.
The next morning, Amir and Nick, who is in, oh my God, Nick in his fucking crop top and short shorts, like.
Look, I'm fine with it. Not that I necessarily, like, have any sort of, like, he looks like Franklin the Turtle to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, so he's not attractive whatsoever.
Not, at least not to me. Some people, that might be your thing, have at it. But I'm not going to shade a man for wearing something that is a little bit more feminine. Because we celebrate feminine clothing on whoever wants to wear the feminine clothing.
Correct.
Like, you do you, boo.
And it wasn't even that it was feminine. It was just a little, just like, what?
Well, but like a crop top is like inherently, well, not inherently, it because like it's just a fucking shirt. Well,
but he was, it was like he was trying to do like 80s, like,
right.
Like working out on the beach vibe. And it was just like, this isn't you.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was very, we're going to go play some volleyball.
Yeah. Very that.
Sleepaway camp sort of vibes.
Yeah. No, it didn't work. But they're cleaning up like the pool area from the night before. Jordan goes to Shanice's room to talk to her and be like, hey, did you talk to you and Summer get to like talk about your issues? And Shanice's like, you know, we're going to. I just don't like how she said, you know, what she said. Jordan goes, I don't think her intentions are ever bad. I mean, I told you I had to cuss her out before we got here. And Shanice is like, about what? She goes, she was out of her mother, out of motherfucking control in front of my building doing the most with one of my favorite bartenders. Like, you can't go across the street and not near my doorman. And so it was apparently like making out with her friend who's a bartender in the car.
Making outside, out and more.
And more in the car and then outside in front of her fucking building. Like, and it was just a case of just like, Jordan's just like,
it's just messy.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's disrespectful. And like, you know, and it seems like Jordan's in a good enough area
yeah.
to where it's just like having like, yeah, if you bring around people who are going to like, be like macking on each other, like in public, it's just a little like,
well, and especially when it's like, oh, I recognize you. You're on TV. Oh, you're associated with this person. Like, now what you do in front of my building, if people now see me at that, they think I do that shit too. And that's not down. Like, I'm yeah. not down like that. I'm not doing it.
I just can't, like, sometimes it's just like the gall of humans sometimes. It's yeah. great for television, but it's like, I can never imagine. Amir, Preston, Bria, and Noelle all going out to go grocery shopping for the night. Amir is asking Noelle, he's like, what was up with Hendrix the night before? Like, how did that go? Noelle goes, you know, he's just one of those guys that wants you to be all up on him. And I'm just not that type of girl. Like, I just met you. So basically, kind of saying like he wanted... I took that at, I was like, wait, what are you talking about first? But then I was like, I think she's saying he wanted to lay that night.
Oh.
And she's like, I don't do that.
Because I was remembering the camera footage and going,
I was like, you were like rubbing bubbles all up his.
You seem pretty up on him to me.
Yeah. But then there's that and then doing the deed.
Right.
That's the only thing I could think of what she was kind of saying.
Right. It's different to. Rub the mountain, but climbing the mountain is different.
Yeah. Amir's like, I saw you and Alex had like a little moment in the kitchen. Noelle's like, yeah, we had a moment. You know, he's giving single, ready to mingle, but I also get from Alex that he doesn't want to show his hand, which is so accurate. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's the thing. It's just like, he's very, like, covert.
Yeah.
Amir's like, you know, Alex thinks that you're attractive and that you have a great personality. He really wants to know if there's compatibility versus just chemistry. Which, like, what does that mean? Like,
well, that makes sense. Like, I don't think that look, here's the thing.
In moment
one. I think that's bullshit. I don't think that he's concerned about that at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do, there is a big difference between compatibility and chemistry.
But why do you have to get to, you're not going to go steady. Like, you're day four in this house.
Well, that's what
other.
I'm saying. I don't think he's actually interested in that. I think Amir thinks he's interested in that because Amir has like this very, rose-tinted glasses view of the world.
Yeah, he's very, like, when he was
He's a little naive.
There was something, like, high school-y about, like, Emile's, yeah. like, not in a bad way, but in, like, right. a, like...
It's almost charming.
Yeah, honestly, I find Emile very charming, and I...
Yeah.
You know, that might be a problem down the road, but hey.
Yeah, honestly. But I think he just, like... thinks the best of people, and you know, once you know, if yeah. someone's interested, then it's clearly for something more than just sex. Like, you know, you're interested in starting a relationship with this person, so like you want more than just chemistry. You want compatibility. Would we actually work? Do you think that we would work long term, or do you think we would just work for tonight? Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, there's a difference, and I think Amir is like, yeah. That's lovely. That's the kind of person that my friend is, right? Right? Guys? No?
And speaking of, like, the gay straight difference, like you were mentioning before, Noelle goes, I mean, how would you guys feel if, like, your girl had, like, dealings? And I love Amir just goes, Summer. You're talking about Summer. Preston goes, look, she doesn't care at all. And Noelle goes, but I do. And Preston goes, please, y'all could be exchanging dick stories. Like, was it good for you? Like, it was good for
yeah.
And it's like, that is the gay mindset.
Yep.
As they're going to the grocery shop, Jasmine, Jordan, and Summer.
Which is just echoing the from brunch when Preston was like, let's get down to details. Was the dick good?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm all for the details. Jasmine,
the details.
There you go. Jasmine, Jordan, and Summer are discussing like the concept of like, you know, who's going to have like friends coming to the house, basically. Like, what's the plan in terms of that? And then Jasmine goes, Mariah is coming, though, you know, and we're in a much better place now. We've worked through things. But notice the time she's saying Mariah is coming. But I also was confused that some people, like, it also is how there is some playing with words later in terms yeah. of discussions where it's like, is she coming to Martha's Vineyard or is she coming to the house? Like, people are like,
right.
Like, some people are going to be in the area, but not at the house. And so, like, there's some weirdness there. And then Summer drops, you know, Shanice said that Phil is here too. And Jordan goes, oh, he can say where he's at. Jordan's like, no, fuck that. Summer goes, yeah, I'm not saying he's going to stay in the house, but I think he's going to come visit. And Jordan's just like, what are we doing here? This is like, Jordan is fed. I mean, Jordan almost strangled that man last season. So
yeah, I don't, was there anybody in the house that was like, no, we love Phil. Phil's great. Why did we kick him out?
That's about it. Jasmine goes, I don't know if I trust Phil to be in the house with other people. And Jordan goes, I don't trust him for anything other than to get on my nerves. So
honestly.
And so basically that Jasmine's like, we got to broach this essentially.
Yeah.
They get back to the house from grocery shopping. I love Amir going, why is there a hot comb in the kitchen? And Preston goes, I call that my childhood. But I love that Amir doesn't recognize that.
Because like, he wasn't raised with black culture. Like, he doesn't know like hot combs and that's.
See, I learn more about black culture, but I'm not, again, being
yeah.
white, I'm not versed. I'm just, that is weird to me just in the sense of I wouldn't want to mix hair care with food.
Oh, no, it's not about the food. Okay. So there, especially like a while ago, there are a lot more better products now for black hair. But back then there weren't a lot because people weren't spending money on it. Like, we didn't have black people in a position where they could invest in businesses that were focused on taking care of black hair, you know, and there was a lot of black people having to, and there's a lot of it still today, like especially around hair, having to fit into whiteness.
Right.
Having to conform to a white ideal of what is acceptable. And so hot combs they're kind of like really, it's hair straightener.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's like hotter, and you heat it like over the stove.
Oh, okay, all right.
So like,
I was like, where are we getting with? I was like, yes, I understand that, but like again, why in the kitchen?
Well, you heat it over the stove. I think they have electric ones now, but like you heat, and so there's like just this and a lot of like,
so the technology advanced,
right? And a lot of black folks would also wash their hair in the kitchen sink, like their parents would wash their moms would wash their hair in the kitchen sink, because that's just how you had to do it. Because there's a lot of history with black people and their hair and like the history there. There's a reason the hot comb's in the kitchen, and people that grew up or were around it understand.
Good to know. Good to know.
That was a long history of me talking in generalities, because I only know about it in generalities, sure. Right? Because I didn't experience it firsthand.
Yeah.
But I grew up with people that did.
Amir is like, Alex, I didn't get you anything, but like Noelle thought of you. And because I guess Noelle grabbed something for Alex from the store. And the way Summer does like a turnaround look at them as Amir yeah. says that. Noelle goes, it's vegan. And Alex says, yeah, I'm not really a tofu guy, but, you know, it is the effort. And they're like, really, dude? Like, you're supposed to have all this game, and, like, that's what you say? Okay. Summer in her confessional goes, like, why do you think I want you to have him? Like, that was so cringy. Like,
yeah.
Jasmine then decides to call a house meeting, and I love Alex goes, oh, God, the spirit of Silas is speaking through Jasmine. And Jasmine's like, I promise this is going to be the only one. We're not going to do this all the fucking time anymore.
Cue next episode where who knows? I don't know that we're going to get one, but yeah.
And I love they do like a bunch of confessionals where everyone's like nervous about the meeting. And even Milo gets a confessional.
That was great.
Jasmine,
well, Milo was central to one of the house meetings last season.
To the house meetings.
Or like
yeah.
two of them, actually.
No, I need Milo's opinion because Phil was the one that let him out of the fucking room, remember?
Well, and also with Mariah, because yeah. him and Mariah have beef.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jasmine goes, I think we should talk about guests. Two specific people I want to talk about. How do we feel with Phil coming as Shanice and Bria's guest? And Amir goes, he shouldn't. Shanice goes, but what if he were to apologize to every single person? Like trying to get some, like, I have some assurance to maybe, you know, that in terms of that. Amir goes, look, Phil took it upon himself to take a shit in Nick's toilet and make him flush it. And I love they cut to Noelle's face because she has no idea. And she's yeah. like, oh, God, that's really terrible.
But also, Noelle, you didn't watch season one before you came on season two.
I mean, yeah, that's fair. She goes, and then, you know, disrespect Preston, call out Alex, and then he wanted to go toe-to-toe with me. I don't owe him shit.
Well, and the thing is that the shit in the toilet was like, it was disrespectful, but it was the bottom of the list of bullshit that he did that night. Yeah. And it was one night. He was there for like 4 or 5 hours.
And he did that much damage.
It was awful.
Yeah. Preston goes, he gives me a lot of vibes that are off-putting and unhealthy as fuck. How he came in last year, he makes me feel uncomfortable. Absolutely a no. My answer's not changing. Like, very firm in his stance. Which
he talks about it later.
Yes. I'm going to advocate, just to know for the viewers, I'm going to advocate, arguably devil's advocate, for Bria slightly in this whole thing. However, I agree with Preston and all the other men. Like, I agree that Phil should not be
right
coming back into that house. Like, it's ridiculous. Bria goes, he's not going to be like that. Amir goes, I mean, she called him the next morning. Shanice did after it happened. I forgot about that. And Preston goes, he said, fuck all of them. And I quote, and they play the clip of it. And Bria goes, he was still drunk. And I'm like, okay, but that also speaks to a problem though.
Right.
He was still drunk the next morning.
Yeah.
That speaks to, like, the propensity of a person that, like, I don't want in that house. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, that's not okay, Bria. Jordan, Alex, and Nick also all express their issues. And, like, Shanice just goes, I mean, I think Phil's fun as fuck. Like, we can't argue. You know, we can't argue, though. He's not going to come. Like, Bria then says to her confessional, it's not like I'm asking Phil to take one of the bunk beds in the basement. He's just here to have a good time and then leave. They're literally acting like this man committed a murder. He didn't physically assault anybody. Maybe he physically assaulted with his words. That's called verbal.
Jesus Christ. Well, but we see why she's stuck on the physical assault thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because we're about to talk about Mariah.
Did you? I don't know if you thought about this. What would have happened if Jasmine flipped it and went with the Mariah conversation first? And then the Phil. Do you like, in terms of like, would it have been better for everyone to like soften things? Probably not, but like maybe a little bit better.
No, I don't think so. Well, I think everyone would have been just as irritated about Phil.
Yeah. I think more in terms of...
But I don't know that we ever would have got to the Phil conversation, because I have a feeling that we may have... It may have gotten nastier about Mariah.
Right. My hope was that the Mariah thing would soften Bria slightly, because I think part of the reason Bria reacts is that she feels, right or not, that her feelings are not being taken into account at all. So if you
yes, because her feelings are bullshit.
Fine.
She's mad about a blanket being thrown at her.
Yes. But fine, if we want to, but if you're calling a house meeting in terms of everyone and you're addressing, like, why address Mariah at all at that point?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're addressing it to address Bria's feelings. And so therefore, like, I just think it would be better to sort of center Bria's feelings first and then center everyone else's in regards to Phil after that. Because I think that's part of the reason why Bria reacts the way she does. Because everyone's very firmly like, no, Phil, rightfully so.
Maybe, but I just feel like Bria has a propensity to, instead of actually talking things out when she's upset about something, to just get up and walk away.
1,000%.
Because this is the third time she's done it, and she's going to do it. Or no, the second time she's done it, and she's going to do it a third time on this episode.
Sure. Amir goes, like, if you guys want to go hang out with him, we can go do something else. Like, you can go hang out with him, but he's not coming to the house, basically.
Yeah.
Jasmine goes, so how do we feel about Mariah coming back? And Amir, like, without hesitation, Amir goes, I don't have no problems with Mariah. And Preston goes, I would love for Mariah to come. Like, that's my thing. It's just, like, that's where I can understand Bria just being, like, there's no, like, Bria? Like, you know what I mean?
Because everyone knows that Bria overreacted.
Right.
Mariah never should have got kicked out last season.
I agree. This is why I made that preface. I agree with all of that. I am team Mariah. I am not team Bria in terms of any of the argument. I'm just saying because Bria gets up at one point and just like, I'm done with this. Like, you know, you guys can have your conversation. I don't want to talk anymore. And goes, y'all get on my damn nerves. And then Jasmine goes, look, I personally have spoken to Mariah about you and her intention is just good energy and being on the same page. And Bria goes, look, I trust you, so I don't mind. Like that, like she's just like, I will take your word for it. And I think it's coming from a place of, I will take your word for it on the assurances that you're giving me in the way that I wasn't taking my word on with the assurances I gave about Phil. Different scenarios, and again, I agree. But you know what I'm saying? I'm just speaking to what the instinct is of her in terms of like how this conversation moved.
Sure. I get that. My problem with Bria is that she does not have the maturity to ever look at things from someone else's point of view.
That is true. That is very true. And I didn't like how dismissive they were at parts about the Phil issue. Like, you know what I mean? Because it's like, yeah, guys, it was an issue. Shanice and Bria then call Phil on the balcony or whatever to tell him about the conversation. She goes, we just had a talk with the house and everyone has strong feelings still. You know, one person in general is Preston. And Phil goes, that was wild. I don't even remember. Again, that's a problem. Like, if you're like, you don't remember.
I just.
Preston gets really emotional and Amir's like tending to the barbecue or whatever, but Preston's like getting, and it's one of those things where it's like your emotions are building up and you start crying because you just are so angry and like,
oh no, I don't think that's it. I think it triggered something about his dad.
Well, I think that's part of it. Don't get me wrong.
Because it was a comment about him being soft.
So yeah,
was not that big of a deal for Preston to be that, because he seems like he's triggered about something.
He's like, this is why I hate being the only gay person in this house sometimes, I swear. And he describes the like issue of like one of the things of like when Phil was originally came into the house and Preston with him are there, he makes a comment of like, don't be soft or something. Like,
right. Cause he was doing his skincare routine, getting ready to go out.
Yeah. And I don't, and the way Preston puts it, he goes, I never felt comfortable with Phil in the house. Call it soft, call it whatever. Even if it's not intentional, which it might not have been. I don't know if you can explicitly say it was with an intention of homophobia. But he goes, I know what those words mean. You won't even know the feeling until you've been bullied, talked about from the very people that are supposed to love you by virtue of your blackness. And I think he's more talking about black people in general. And not, and again, not my place, but like there is a talk about like homophobia in the black community specifically.
Right.
And like, I think it's just the tension of like, when you have, I beyond even a word, right? When you're a gay person in a situation that is volatile,
yeah,
you don't know if that volatile person is homophobic or not.
Yeah.
And so therefore...
Well, and when you know that he has at least made a disparaging comment towards you.
Yeah.
That highlighted your queerness as a point of contention. You then are in a... Like, he's supposed to be on this trip with friends. This is supposed to be a place where he is safe.
Right.
And that got violated. And then it got, I think, with his dad having a very similar reaction when he started coming back into his life, literally telling him, I didn't raise you to be gay.
Right.
And all of those feelings about that with his dad dying just a few days before, like...
Yeah.
It's just all right there.
Well, yeah, I agree. I what I'm saying is kind of like, it's a violence thing. And
right.
Like, the way that Amir and Alex would handle a situation like that, if Phil were to come back in the house, they would handle it pretty much with ease because they have this ability to just like basically check him. And, you know, if it needs to get to a fight, it'll get to a fight. But when you're a gay person, like you can't, you don't know what that fight's going to turn into.
Right.
And how it's going to turn into just like a normal fight into then something that has a backing and a like sort of like
right
extra bit of hatred behind it,
right?
And those can turn really terrible. So I understood it completely when Preston was talking about it. Bria, Noelle walks up to Bria and Shanice, and Bria goes, hey Phil, this is Noelle. And Noelle goes, hey Phil. And Phil goes, hello, you sound cute. Which Phil's a little funny at points, I will say that. I hate to say it. Bria goes, Mariah's coming, and I know y'all still talk. And Phil goes, yeah, yeah. She told me not to tell y'all. She was trying to pop up. And Noelle goes, I mean, it can never be a pop-up. It always has to be a vote. And Phil goes, I mean, Jasmine's flying Mariah out. She's landing on the first. Bria goes, I didn't know that bitch had a secured plane ticket. And Bria's like, what the fuck is this about? Like, is it like presented as if like you needed to consult me before bringing Mariah, but you've already bought her plane ticket, and like, what the hell? Bria goes, do you have plans to meet up with her? And Phil goes, yeah, we talked about it. So, and then this comes up later at the dinner. So like, Bria's feeling upset. She goes, I'm feeling played right now. She was going to bring Mariah to the house regardless of the house meeting. We're roomies. We share the same bathroom. There were so many opportunities to tell me. I love the throwing out.
Yeah.
Like, we have a bathroom together. But again, I can feel, again, I think it's a combination of Bria felt discounted in the meeting. And then on top of this, you then find out, oh, wait, you bought her plane ticket already? That's like, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's a buildup. They all get ready to go out. To dinner. Summer checks on Jordan in her room, say, hey, how's it going? And Jordan is crying and about, you know, my hair's falling out and I don't feel like myself at all. And she's really taking it hard. And Summer's like comforting her.
Yeah.
In terms of, I think this plays a lot into what happens at the end of the episode. Like, in terms of why things get, because we were so, spoiler alert, we were so confused as to why things got so heightened, like with everyone.
Yeah.
It's like everyone was pissed at everyone. Jordan tells her, like, even when I was wearing wigs before, it was an option. Now it's like a weird necessity. And so that's like a shift that's like hard to deal with.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They arrive at dinner and they all sit down. I love Noelle. It leads the grace with like some of the girls. And it's one of those quick, like sort of like quick, like rhymey graces. And, and Bria goes, God keep my attitude in check. And Shanice goes, and God keep my vagina in my dress.
What?
You don't need to be telling God that.
No.
You can do that yourself.
No.
Shanice then just blurts out, I probably have a UTI from that damn slide. And I love Amir goes, Shanice, you didn't say that quietly at all, by the way.
And why should she? UTIs are a perfectly natural part of life.
I am not your doctor. Take it up with your doctor, please. Like,
sure, but like, I am not, after centuries of women being policed on their what they are and aren't allowed to talk about,
sure,
and being shamed about what happens with their vagina, I am absolutely not going to be someone who goes, ew, that's disgusting.
I don't, fine, yes. I will say Shanice pushes the limit on that. Pusses. No, I know what I said. I know what I said. Anyways, and I love Shanice because, you know, last night was the first party I've ever hosted in my life. And they're like, oh, really? That's great. Shanice goes, like, we always have all these, like, serious conversations. Last night we had nothing and it was great.
It was wonderful. Let's blow that shit up.
Right. But, like, that speaks to also just, like, Shanice maybe have a serious conversation every once in a while. But then immediately Bria goes, hey, Jasmine, quick question.
Not quick. Not quick.
Was it premeditated to have Mariah in the house? And Jasmine goes, I mean, I definitely wanted to invite her for sure. And Bria goes, but like, is her ticket already booked? And Jasmine goes, as of now it is, yeah. And Bria goes, since when? And Jasmine goes, probably last night. Also, probably last night. What? You don't remember if you booked her ticket last night? And then they cut to the ticket and she booked it 5 days ago. And I'm like, oh, Jasmine, you're lying. You're lying a little
now,
bit.
Now, what I will ask, because this just occurred to me.
Uh-huh.
Did Jasmine buy the ticket for Mariah?
I think.
Or did Jasmine give her the money to buy the ticket and then Mariah booked it 5 days ago?
That's a question, but it seems like Jasmine bought the ticket directly.
That is what it seems like to me, too. I'm just asking the question. But also, as of last night, you still didn't have the meeting until today.
Right, exactly. It's, like, confusing.
But also, if Jasmine already knew that most everybody in the house would be fine with it, and the only person that would have a problem is Bria and maybe Shanice.
Well, she says Bria and Amir because Amir was involved in the laundry drama, remember? But like.
But Amir was.
That's a simple fix.
Amir was like involved in it in that.
He did it and then didn't take the credit for it.
Yeah, but that was like after the. Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Like.
The way Jasmine goes, y'all know how flights work. If it was a no from the house. Canceled. And she has a look on her face. Like, the look on Jasmine's face is like, I'm spinning here. I'm sorry. She's lying to Bria a little bit. And yeah. So, therefore, it's like, side eye you a little bit.
But I do kind of understand where she's coming from. If that was part of the truth, maybe even, like, an excuse that they came up with at the time, it kind of still makes sense, right? Like, you do kind of have to book in advance, and then you have, like, maybe 48 hours before the flight to cancel or whatever.
Sure.
You know, I don't know. I'm just saying there is a world in which she is telling the truth, but I still think there was some shady movement.
Right. Bria goes, so after our conversation, we called Phil to let him know that it's a no-go. He said he plans on meeting up with Mariah once she gets here. And Preston goes, to come to the house? And Bria goes, that's the plan. And Jordan goes, he's not welcome in the house. Preston goes, what's going to prevent him from coming? And Jordan goes, what's going to prevent him is we're not going to let him in the crib. Like really upset about this. Bria goes, look, all I'm saying is if he shows up in different spots, it's not from me and Shanice inviting him out, like trying to clarify, like, because they kind of really were like jumped on Bria saying that. She's like, that you guys are misinterpreting. The point is I'm saying that I made it clear to him it is a no. And he is saying that the plan was for him to be with Mariah. So if Mariah is coming to the house and Phil shows up, that has nothing to do with us.
Right. But Phil was saying that he had another. They were saying that Phil was staying somewhere else. Then the plan wasn't for him to be with Mariah.
Right. But then where is he going to be? I don't. But is it the same house with Mariah? I don't know. Because Mariah is not staying at the house either, I think. I think Mariah is just coming by to hang and then.
Well, then why does the fucking plane ticket matter? If she was staying somewhere else, then who gives a shit whether she's in Martha's Vineyard?
Well, sure. Maybe they just didn't have enough rooms in the house. This is where I was talking before, where it's like someone.
Well, I mean, there is an empty bed in Noelle's room.
Well, that's true. Jasmine goes, if there's now a question of does Mariah have something up her sleeve, I don't know what Phil's been telling you. And then Jordan goes, but when it came to Mariah, nobody considered what Bria had gone through with her, like sticking it for Bria.
And I'm sorry. The fact that anybody is treating that like it was anything other than a petulant child getting mad because she was getting called out for not disclosing that her dog would be on this trip is ridiculous.
Sure. And she's like, and I think it's because you took the initiative to buy the flight before speaking to her. And Jasmine goes, but to me, that's an economic decision. Like, it's not like it wasn't, it was just for to get my finances, like, in a place where it's like, buy this now. Jordan goes, between Mariah and Phil, it's causing too much mess. She says this in the confessional. I don't think people consider Bria's feelings. Now, do I think she really feels as deeply about Mariah as she's expressing right now? No. But she has a valid point. I still don't think
she has a valid point.
I think Jordan's doing my same devil's advocate.
Sure. I just, when it was so stupid to begin with, and they already were giving you way too much room and leeway last year over this bullshit and kicked her out of the house over your ass. Sit down and shut up.
Sure. Jordan does make the point of, if they had done that with Phil, we would be looking at them crazy. Which is
a... But it was a different situation. You can't act like what Mariah did was the same as what Phil did.
Well, also, is there a way then at that point to not frame? Like, it's... Because I think... Because Jasmine linked the two together, right, in the meeting, right?
Right, but that was about having people at the house.
Yeah, but like, I guess when you, I'm trying to justify it where it's like, by linking it to, aren't you like also putting it on the same level in a certain way? I don't know. Like that. Summer goes, we have to acknowledge the fact though that Jasmine did bring it up. Like she addressed it. Jordan goes, but I don't think that's the point. And Summer goes, oh, okay, my bad. Damn. Like, I'll just shut the fuck up. Like, it's not that deep, guys. And Bria goes, it is that deep.
But like, it's literally not.
This is where it starts, where Jordan kind of like jumps down Summer a little bit. I do think like Jordan snapping, like, that's not what we're talking about, is a little like, you know, being extra snappy. And then Shanice then goes, when Summer's like, damn, I'll be quiet. So Shanice goes, go get shots for us, Summer. And does like this, like the flick of the hand motion.
Like this dismissal, like, oh my God, really? Like,
oh, wow. What is happening? This is where I was like, I'm just confused about the anger, right? Well, Shanice, yeah. I understand. But like Jasmine goes, Bria, I don't want you to feel set up. That, you know, that hurts my feelings. Bria goes, look, it's shady. And Jasmine goes, I see sun.
That was such a good, like, I loved that.
The way she pulled that out and I was like, ooh, I've never heard that before. That was nice.
And take that, put it in my back pocket. Thank you very much.
So they're talking still some more. Amir asked Summer, like, do you broach the thing with Shanice? Would you want to talk to her? And then Summer's like, sure. And Amir goes, Shanice, are you willing to talk to Summer? And I love Shanice goes, right now? God, my brain's tired, guys. Like, I've never had this many conversations in my life. She's like, let me just take my top off. Like,
titties.
Shanice goes, look, the reason I was triggered last night was, you know that I lost my job. And they kind of, and she talks about this stuff before. Summer goes, look, it's not that you don't look good. You have the best body at this table. Like, you put in the fucking work.
And Noelle was like, excuse the fuck out of you.
And, well, and then a couple people go, like, chuckle a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't like the chuckle.
And then, I think they were just chuckling at, like, the com. Not that they were chuckling that she was lying to Shanice that she had the best body, but that it was like a, oh my God, that's the thing you bring up or something. And Summer goes, stop, it's not funny right now. Jordan goes, who's laughing? And Summer goes, they were. I'm not
Bitch,
talking to you.
Several people. Shut the fuck up.
She goes, I'm not talking about you. Jordan goes, why are you turning up, Summer? I'm like, Jordan, you're turning up as well. What are, like, it was just like, why are they sniping at each other?
I didn't get it either.
Yeah. At this point, Bria texts her mom, I'm ready to go home.
I don't even know that it wasn't her mom. I thought she was texting a producer.
I think it was her mom. But I think she's just communicating with, because I was like, home to, like, out of the vineyard. But no, she just means back to the house or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, direct communication. Shanice and Summer squash their thing, but then Bria gets up and goes, hey guys, my car is here. I'm going to head home. Like, again.
That's
like,
why I was thinking it was a producer, because it was so quick.
Maybe it was a producer. I could have sworn it said mom on the thing.
It may have.
Preston in his confessional goes, Bria walks out so often that the next time she walks out of Martha's Vineyard, I hope it's to New York or to Germany.
Honestly.
There should be a drink every time Bria walks off from something.
No, that's called alcohol poisoning.
Sure. I mean, you gotta space out with a couple episodes, but whatever.
I mean, I guess.
Summer, so some people then disperse or whatever. So Summer is at the table with Jordan and goes, with Preston. Jordan has left at this point. She goes, Preston, was I wrong when I was talking to Jordan? And Preston goes, I mean, you do sometimes raise your voice when you're talking to people. And Summer goes, but Jordan doesn't. And Preston goes, she does too, for sure. You could tell. So Summer's a little drunk here. And then she gets a little drunker later. She goes, but when I do it, it's wrong. Everyone allows Jordan to be mean. Why can't we all go through this with love? Drunk Summer was amazing to me because it's so classic. Like,
oh, yeah.
Summer says in her confessional, like, look, you can disagree with me, but it's how you talk to me. And I don't like how Jordan talks to me.
Yeah.
Essentially. And I agree. I thought Jordan was kind of being a bit nasty.
I felt like Jordan was in the mood to fight. And so she was picking a fight with the person that she knew she could get a rise out of.
Right. And I think, again, it was like she's already feeling sensitive with the hair stuff. So well, I think
that's what I mean. I think she just needed to get some of that anger and energy out.
Yeah.
And so she was like, yeah, I'll just fucking get Summer. Summer will go.
Yeah. They head back out to the same bar from the night before, some of them. And Alex is like macking on some girls, and Noelle's kind of feeling a little jealous about it. She's telling the girls about this in the bathroom. She's like, but I feel like I can't say anything. Jasmine's like, you have a right to feel a type of way. And Shanice goes, Alex is a fuck boy. Just watch the way he moves. Like, just.
Yeah.
Like, girl, like, this is who she is. They sit at a table and discuss it a little bit more, and then they're like, you should have a talk with Alex. And so now it's just Alex and Noelle at the table, and he's like, what's up, you know? And she goes, I think you're a very attractive person, and I think you're cool, but, like, you probably don't even know that I have interest in you. Like, do you know that? And Alex goes, I think you kind of shared that with me a little bit. I'm enjoying just getting to know you as a new person in the group, basically. I liked how Noelle, I fell in love with Noelle this episode, and I really liked how she approached this conversation. She goes, a toxic trait of mine is that sometimes I can become territorial of people, but also I realized last night I was acting single too. You know, you're single, and I want you to move freely without the thoughts of me, but I still want you to think of me as somebody you can be of interest. Like,
yeah,
for her to just admit, this is my toxic trait. Like, I acknowledge, and to actively acknowledge, I was also flirting with Hendrick. I was doing all that stuff the night before. So I understand that by me saying this, I am, like, conflicted, right? I'm being
right, a little hypocritical.
Right. And so that was nice of her. Alex goes, I think you're a really sweet girl. And the minute Noelle says, because that is the classic sign of, like, I'm not interested.
Yep.
He goes, look, I've been through a lot of situations where people create expectations of me, and Noelle's like this in terms of, like, setting, you know, relationship standards, which it's like, grow up. That's what you're supposed to do, Alex. Like, I'm sorry.
But I think he was also, like, referencing Summer.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. It seemed like he was like, I don't want to get in a situation like I was just in with Summer where she thought it was more than it was. I didn't think it was that. And then everybody got hurt.
Right.
That's not what I want here.
And this is where Alex also talks about, like, the last relationship I got in too fast. And so, which, again, I think
it's talking about Summer.
Sure, maybe. Noelle goes, I get it. I know. And then she just goes, Alex, I'm feeling so embarrassed. Like it's kind of an embarrassing thing to, like, put yourself out there and get rejected like that. Noelle says to her confessional, that's just a cute way of saying, no, I'm not interested. I was trying to go off the encouragement of some of my housemates, and then when I put myself out there, I get burned. And I do understand why, like, that sucks, because it's like when everyone's like, yeah, it's open. Like, it's an open field. Go for it. You then build up that possible expectation.
But even then, I still think it's a better situation, because now she knows where she stands, and she can stop wasting her energy.
That's true. Yeah. I just love the way she handled it.
Yeah.
If Noah was listening, maybe you might have felt embarrassed, but, like, you did it, everything that you should have done, and you were responsible, and you, like, you know, I think she really is commendable for what she did.
Well, and nobody watching that thinks that you were being embarrassing.
No.
Everybody that was watching that gained respect for you in that moment.
Yeah.
So it's like, you don't need to be embarrassed. Like, I validate the fact that you feel embarrassed. I would probably feel embarrassed in that situation too. Like, that is completely valid. But know that that has nothing to do with how other people are perceiving you. It has everything to do with society placing expectations on women and their feelings.
Yeah.
I agree. That's it.
They all load into the cars to go back to the house. And so they pull into the driveway of the house. The first car exits and goes into the house. But there's a car with Alex, Preston, Jordan in the backseat, and then Summer in, like, the passenger side.
Uh-huh.
And Jordan goes, Summer, we have to talk. Like, what's going on? I was like, oh, this is the wrong time to talk, though. Like you guys are really – because clearly Summer is more drunk. Jordan, uh-huh. I think, is probably sober-ish.
Well, but also you are in a – you're in a vehicle where your voices are going to echo and ping off of things, and that's just going to make it worse. You don't have big fights in tin cans. You don't do it.
It's a pressure cooker.
Uh-huh.
Like, and speaking of that, so she's like, Summer, we have to talk. Summer just opens her door, and Jordan goes, and now you're leaving. Like, again, I think there's, like, every little thing pisses off Jordan. Summer just goes, I'm not leaving. I need air because it's hot.
Yeah.
Jordan goes, you interrupted me and wanted to turn up, and I don't understand what's going on. Summer goes, you want to attack people. And Jordan goes, you feel attacked? I'm having a conversation. Summer goes, I can't say a fucking word. Preston, chime in. Preston goes, I don't think you're hearing each other. He's so like, I think Preston's also like, this isn't the place to have the conversation.
Yeah.
So Summer goes, I don't think we are. I'm tired, dude. And then Summer goes out of the car. Like, I think she steps like into the front of the house, but then comes back towards the car and goes, I'm going to say one thing. And yeah, I'm going to walk away after I say it because I'm not a good friend to you. And Jordan goes, no one said that to you. Like, being frustrated. But then because she interrupted, Summer goes, I didn't even get to say what I wanted to say.
And Preston's sitting here this whole time going, this is why I don't go out with y'all.
Yeah.
This is why I sit my ass at home and watch my stories.
And they're like, guys. And then Summer just slams the door and it's the to be continued.
Yeah.
Drunk Summer is hilarious to me.
Very, very, very entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like tensions are boiling up and it seems like it's going to get a little more next episode and that should be really fun.
All right, let's get into these tops and bottoms. We got Drag Race, we got Potomac, we got Martha's Vineyard. What you thinking, babe?
I'm going to start with my bottom. Well, both my top and bottom are from Potomac, I'll say
okay.
That. My bottom is going to go to Giselle. I mean, we kind of litigated Giselle's issues like for this whole season, basically. But again, not moving forward with anything, just a stank attitude. And just like, again, when people are even apologizing or showing emotion towards you or any, it's just like to be so cold like that, I just find to be ridiculous at this point. And
yeah.
Again, it's hard to see someone who feels, and probably rightfully so, that production's in their back pocket. That's a precarious predicament to be in.
Yeah.
As a show. And so I really hope that like they can, like, if Robin goes, maybe that'll shake that up. But like, I really think that like Giselle needs a wake up call in many regards. If she's going to continue on next season, my top, for this week, I got to give it to Chris Bassett. We are a Chris Bassett household.
Yep.
But this particular episode, I was just like, that
candy canes and Bassett hounds.
Yeah. That was a great response to everything. And like, it was done in such a way of just like, he didn't raise his voice. He didn't like get out of whack in terms of like, you know, getting overly emotional of things. He controlled that room in a way that was really impressive and really put those like Giselle in check, Robin in check, put Andy in check, all of them. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Like really, really great stuff. And I don't like, for whatever people say about like husband's contributions to the show, Chris, I think, does it in a way that makes sense and is perfect to me. What about you, babe? What are your tops and bottoms?
My bottom is Bria.
Yeah, you ain't a Bria fan.
I'm not a Bria fan. I wasn't a Bria. Now, that does not mean that I am not a huge fan of Milo. I think he's cute. He's adorable. He's lovely. He can do no wrong except for shitting on the floor. But that's a dog. That's what dogs are going to do. Like, at a certain point, you got to get over it. But I'm really just irritated with how Bria moves.
Yeah.
She clearly does not have the maturity to have these adult conversations. It makes for great television,
yeah.
But I wouldn't want someone with her personality in my friend group.
Yeah.
I could not handle it.
Even when I kind of like what she contributes as like a reality connoisseur,
right.
I do also get annoyed by the walking off a lot.
Yeah, because it's like, what are you doing? Like, reality TV is about the fights.
Yeah.
You sit and have the fight. You don't get to walk. Really? 4 episodes, 3 walk-offs.
Yeah.
It's a problem. My top is also going to be from Martha's Vineyard, but before I get to that, I am going to do a honorable mention to RuPaul. Because
yeah.
I thought her performance this episode was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved the way she was interacting with the queens, and like she was giving good direction. And it was like, oh, well, maybe you'll remember these girls in, you know, a couple of years. Remember their names. And I thought we as an audience got to really get to know her better, like really like behind the veil, not just here on the show, but also on this press tour for her memoir. I just thought it's a new side of her, and it's really nice to see after all these years. But my real top is going to go to Noelle. She's great. I love her.
Yeah, I
agree. She's a lot of fun. She's very, like, aware of herself and sure of herself. And there's, like, a presence that she has that is not, like, it's not stuck up or anything. But it's very, this is who I am. I'm not wavering from that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to move through this world with confidence. And there's something that's, like, assuring about that,
mm-hmm.
because you know who she is.
Yeah.
I don't have to guess. I don't have to wonder what I'm going to get from Noelle. This is it. This is who she is. And I like a dependable bitch like that. Like someone that I know exactly who you are. I know exactly how you're going to react. That's somebody that I fuck with. You know, that is somebody that I know I can rely on. Even if we're not super close, I know who you are, and I can always depend on you showing up exactly that same way every time. Hey, thanks for tuning into this episode of A Gay and His Envy.
Join us next time for more of our recaps and hot takes. And be sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you are listening. And check us out on our social media at A Gay and His Envy on all the platforms.
A special shout out to Shane Ivers, who wrote Pulsar, the song we use for our theme.
I'm Eamon.
I'm Merlin. And we're out.
This show is a member of the Sorgatron Media Podcast Network. Find out more at sorgatronmedia.com.